Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS.
360-degree cameras securing your Bitcoin. And this show is a toddler. Live from the Twit Studios in Petaluma, California, this is the new Screensavers.
Begin our fourth year of the new Screensavers. Welcome, episode 156 for Saturday, May 12th, 2018. I'm Leo Laporte.
And I'm Kevin Rose.
Whoa!
Yes.
So nice of you to come up here.
It is good to be back.
It's actually a dual anniversary today because yesterday, May 11th, was the 20th anniversary of the launch of ZDTV.
Crazy.
That's why I'm still wearing my pocket protector.
There's a party coming up, too.
See, I didn't know that.
And you didn't know.
Nobody invited me.
He's not on Facebook.
Were you at the beginning of Tech TV? You came later.
Later. That's right. It was it was 2012. So where was that?
2012. 19.
I'm sorry.
You mean 2002?
Two. I missed. I added a one there.
Yeah.
Yes.
2002. So it started May 11th, 1998. Kate and I started the Screensavers on May 11th. I also did Call for Help on May 11th, and I think that many of the other shows, right, Jerry? How many of the shows? I'm sure we had Internet Tonight with Scott and Michaela. I don't remember what other shows.
Money Machine
with Carmen Gallo. Carmine Gallo.
When did the switch happen?
A year later.
One year later?
A year later, they changed it because they would call people up and say, I'm calling from ZDTV, and they'd say, is that the Pasta Network? What exactly do you do?
Right.
And they thought, and we searched for a long time for what could we name it?
And who named it?
Well, I think probably the lawyers got involved, and you know you had to do a search, and they were trying to find a
trademark search.
Yeah,
and all that stuff.
And
yeah.
I think Tech TV ended up being kind of more like the default than anybody's first choice. But that's what happens, right? You try to be, you know, this. You've got to
get the domain.
How many companies have you started? Do you know? Have you?
I'd say probably six or seven, something
Good
like
Lord.
That.
Lord,
yeah, a few.
You have a problem.
I do. I've slowed down a little bit. Maybe it's a little bit more than that.
What is Kevin Rose up to these days?
It's a good question. I have launched a handful of free apps now that I just give away.
I love your meditation app.
Oh, thank you. Oak.
Oak, because it's a tree that as you meditate and you get
kind of grows,
the tree
bigger,
grows.
Yeah.
We've recommended it many times.
Oh, thank
That's
you.
A good one. What else?
I have a fasting app called Zero.
I have that also.
It's intermittent fasting.
It's working so well.
Those are the two things right now.
Yeah. No, actually, because of you and a few other people, Phil Libin and others, but mostly because of you.
Yeah, Phil's big into
I've been
it.
Doing intermittent fasting.
Cool.
Really, do you still do that?
16 hours? Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy. You only eat one meal a day during daylight hours.
Right. Exactly.
Basically.
Well, sometimes two. You can do like a late lunch and then dinner as well.
That's one way. There are many ways.
There's many ways.
But Zero supports all of those.
Yeah.
And those are free. You just do that because you...
Yeah, I mean, I think that everybody has like a way to give back, and I hire a developer and write code is
How
my
fun.
Way to kind of give free software
How fun.
Away.
Well, yeah. you have it. Obviously, you have a knack for that. And then you're still on the board at Hodinkee, which was the watch company that that you bought or merged with Milk.
So that's been growing like crazy.
Yeah,
it's about 25 people or so in New York.
Hodinkee just did the cover story, amazing interview with Johnny Ive about the Apple Watch. We learned stuff about the Apple Watch, the design process. We had no idea.
That's kind of crazy.
It was a great interview.
That was fun. I didn't get a chance to go there, but Ben did, the founder, and that was
Is that Ben's article? Is that who wrote it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Hodinkee, Hodinkee.com if you want to read that. Nice picture of Johnny and a great story. So, and I don't know, is this public knowledge?
But the baby?
The baby?
Yeah. Yeah, Zelda Rose.
They've been renting a baby, and it's working out.
Zelda. Six months old on the 8th.
Zelda Rose.
Kind of crazy.
And you and Daria just loving it?
Are you? Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, the first couple of months are tough. You know, there's a it's a lot to change.
They don't warn you really appropriately.
There's no manual, you know, but it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you know this.
And she's beautiful, I have to say. Zelda is a really beautiful little
lady. Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah. She lights up when you walk into the room and all smiles, and it's just it's amazing.
Well, love to Daria and to Zelda, who could not be here today.
Yeah.
Nap time, you know how it is. We used to call Kevin on the screensavers, the old screensaver. We used to call him the Dark Tipper, and I realize now we're going to have to start calling you the Silver Tipper.
I know, because
you've
coming in. Look at that.
Our silver, our little Kevin is all grown up. Look at that.
That's a little tight. You're like, this was a good shot, and then you came.
And they zoomed right in on that.
With the bags under the eyes.
Zoomed right in on that. Oh, you got to get over that. Believe me, that's
remember when HD cameras came out and everyone was freaking out?
Oh, Lord.
All the news anchors were like, getting Botox right away.
Rightly so. Yeah. I did a live with Regis and Kelly shortly after that. And they were Kelly had already been doing whatever her TV show was in HD. But they were going to start doing live in HD. And they brought in the new makeup artist. And she used an airbrush. And it's like there's a compressor going,
and she spraying it
because you can't use powder because you can see it.
Right,
you can see the details of the powder.
That's crazy.
So they painted our faces. I think they abandoned.
We didn't have that tech at Tech TV.
No, we would not.
We had to do our own makeup. Do you remember they had to fire the makeup people, and then we had to come
ran out of money
and do our own stuff.
It was. I only knew we were really in trouble when they stopped having oatmeal in the snack room in the break room. That's when I knew that Tech TV was. That's when I started looking for work. Actually, our old owner, I guess he owns Paul Allen owned us, right?
Yeah.
The old owner of Ziff Davis, Sunson, is SoftBank.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and he has done very well for himself. He's now trying to sell Sprint to T-Mobile. SoftBank is in a lot of things. One of the things they're into is they bought General Dynamics. You ever hear of that company?
Oh, of course. All the robots.
Google bought
them. The scary ones.
The Google bought them, and not realizing that they had a bunch of defense contracts for making killer robots. And Google, I think rightly so, realized maybe given that we're Google, we shouldn't be in the killer robot business.
Yeah.
So they sold it to Sunson, and they were at some big event. I think, I think it was a TechCrunch Disrupt event. Mm. And they made a surprising announcement. What is that?
That's an incoming call from someone.
Somebody's calling me. Is that on my Skype? Oh, my God. Who's that? Martin Sargent. Smile, man. I thought you were frozen for a minute. Wait, we got to put on hats so poor Marty doesn't feel left out. I'll get you a hat. Marty, how are you?
What's up, Marty?
What are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing the new screensavers. Did I ever tell you we have the new screensavers?
Yeah, I've hosted it with you before, Leo.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. And I'm glad you got the number 3 button for a 3-year-old and you put up streamers and
everything. He's got a picture of himself in the background.
They were having a sale on the threes down at the party stores. Because I guess they moved into the 4 season and these are...
Wait, we called Kevin the Dark Tipper, but Martin had his own name on the show. Do you remember that, Marty?
Yeah. Of course I remember. I did a twisted list every day.
The twisted lister.
That's right.
Paul Block.
Those are some of the best. Paul Block named him and you.
I hated the twisted lister.
He hated the Dark Tipper. I hated Paul Block. So we all are in it together. The twisted lister. But those were funny. Remember? Those were very funny. I loved your twisted lister.
They were supposed to be. I don't know if they really were or not.
Well, they were good. What have you been up to, Mr. Sargent?
I work in advertising.
Oh, you poor son of a bitch.
I'm a writer, creative director at an advertising agency. Here's the thing, though. You work for Tech TV, and every job after that is terrible.
Isn't that the truth? It's so funny because you guys were all so young, and I knew that you were now in the best job you will ever have for the rest of your life.
Awesome.
Because I was like in my mid-40s. I'd worked in broadcasting. I knew how unusual. We got to do what we wanted.
Yeah. It was a party, nonstop.
Until they brought in Paul Block. But before that...
No. But, you know, Paul Block comes on, and they let me come up in, with my own TV show. And
you
make
did
it.
That,
and
yes.
It was ridiculous.
That's the show I appeared on in my underwear, as I remember.
Yeah, you did, uninvited.
Oh, you just walked out, right?
Yeah,
that was great. Ratings, anything for ratings.
Anything for ratings.
That didn't help the ratings.
Here you go. Here's Martin Sargent. This is Unscrewed.
Giving us the star knowledge.
Episode 64.
Oh, that was a bad one.
Of relationships with the Star Nation.
I'm Martin Sargent. Clearly, I'm the guy. Yeah, I'm pretty much the man.
Get with it. Yo, what's up? That's rad, man.
That's
what's
true.
Up?
You got to give Paul credit. Because he figured out a way to take the screensaver set and repurpose it.
Yeah, nighttime.
He'd bring a couch out.
Yeah.
And turn it
into.
There you go. That's the screensaver set. And get a whole other show out of that.
After Hours.
Unscrewed. Do you miss doing that show, Marty?
I miss it every day.
Yeah.
It was the most fun I've ever had in my life. I mean, it was so ridiculous. I can't believe they let us do any of that stuff.
Yeah, they didn't really.
It shouldn't have been on TV. We would travel. Jay Speed and I, he was my main writer.
Yep.
Stuart Angusser, the funniest guys I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
We would travel around the country going to UFO cult compounds and hanging out with like crazy internet celebrities like the Peter Pan guy and just film. And it was so much fun. And we would get really drunk when we did it. It was great.
Basically just got paid to drink the entire time.
There you are with
That's
Kevin.
Right. There's me. No grays there.
No.
His programs from his desktop. Mm-hmm.
Is this a segment
so
called I Hate You?
Launch anything like anybody else.
Yeah,
sure.
What
we're
going to
do is we're going to hit print screen, and that's going to capture a snapshot of the desktop.
Oh, devious.
And then we're going to open up Paint, and we're going to paste it right inside Paint, okay?
Okay, this Paint comes with like
paint
any
with
Windows.
Any Windows, right? 95, 98, you name it. So let's close out Paint. We've already pasted it and saved it here.
What the hell version of Windows is this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do is we'll launch Internet
Explorer.
Oh,
look how Google used to look.
We'll move this out of the way here, and I'll drag this desktop.bitmap right into Internet
Explorer. You haven't started
Dig
at this point.
Now, hold on. It's
no, not yet.
Starting about 2004.
2004, that's right.
If you missed any of that, wow, that is the nerdiest thing that's ever been on this show, Dark Kimmer.
Hopefully I'll have some more.
If you missed any of that, yeah, come back again. Kevin's got an article up on our website.
Now, don't play too much of this.
My hair is horrible.
I'll never forget.
Oh, that's Kevin? Patrick Norton.
No, that was Kevin.
Dude,
I'll never forget.
I have hair.
Standing in the makeup
Patrick.
Room, and you and Dan Heward
yes.
coming in there, and you had a bottle of Bedhead from
that's
Bumble
right.
and Company,
that's
and
right.
you took your hair.
And you just frizzled it out.
That's how you did
little,
that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, but one episode, I said, give me that. And I did it, and it didn't work on me. Did not have the same.
Please tell me we have that footage somewhere.
Somewhere that footage lives on. Marty, we should mention, and I don't want to bring everybody down, but Jay passed away just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
Last year. It was a terrible, terrible loss. Yeah. Maybe my best friend, a main writer on the show, co-collaborator in almost everything I did. Kid was a genius.
That's how you know you've been doing something a long time. Here's to Jay. Whatever is in that thermal vest.
What do you think is in there?
Hey,
because you didn't invite me, I still have to come up there. I'll be up there by the end of the show.
You get in the car. You'll be here before it's over because it's going to be a long show, I think.
Yeah, well, I got to give you your third anniversary gift.
Well, what's that?
Well, you know, traditionally, a third anniversary gift is leather. So,
oh, dear.
I don't know if it's going to fit, but I went down to the docks. And
oh my God.
And I got a pretty fair price on it, I think.
Does it come with the person inside?
Quit ripping my earplugs out. I can't hear anything. God.
Oh my God.
Happy anniversary to me. Woohoo.
it's what you've always asked for.
Hey, you know what? I don't pimp my gimp out to just anybody.
No. I need a gimp. Just wait. Let me ask my wife, but I think it's okay. It's okay. Anyway, it's really nice to see you, Marty. Are you going? I understand that on Thursday at a bar, Marty introduced us to the best dive bars, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What was the one over in the Mission he always used to go to?
Remember that?
Yep.
Uptown.
Yes. You knew that it
you
was
could
Marty's
always find Marty there.
They go, "Hey, Marty," when he walked in.
That's right.
You go, "Oh boy, they know him here." The usual Marty. And it was, I think, six or seven tequila shots, as I remember. Is he uptown?
I drank bourbon.
Bourbon. I'm sorry. I drank the tequila shots. Now I remember. I got in a lot of trouble with those tequila shots. Marty, it's so nice to see you. Please come to the party on Thursday.
Reunion.
Are you going
to that?
What?
I wasn't invited either,
Marty. Nobody knows about
this.
It's a Tech TV reunion party thing. Thursday.
All the cool kids.
I just heard about it.
Got invited.
Where?
I don't know. Downtown somewhere in SF.
If we should have our own party and
who's
screw
going
him.
To this?
Bring the GIMP. He can be your plus one.
It's going to be you and Carmine Gallo.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. Carmine, speaking of hair, he had beautiful black hair, right? Curly. He had a nice, like a fro.
I didn't inspect it.
He used to go in and dye his sideburns white so that he would have more gravitas. Kid you not. Wow. Now we don't have to do that anymore. I bet Carmine doesn't either.
I don't remember. You sure you're not thinking of Alex Trebek?
It's great to see you, Marty. Thank you so much for calling in our third anniversary and the 20th anniversary of Tech TV.
Great to see you guys.
Come up and do
the show. I wish I could
have
been there, but you didn't invite me.
Come up and do the show sometime soon.
Yeah, bring the GIMP. Okay. Or not.
Do not.
Maybe we'll see you Thursday.
I don't even know. We'll send you secret invitation details. Okay, Marty?
Deal.
Okay. We didn't want to say it on the air because we were afraid a massive crowd would show up. Actually, we were afraid a massive crowd wouldn't show up.
It'd be like 10 people.
Yeah. See you, Marty. Happy anniversary. Great to see you. Oh, that's nice. What a surprise.
That's awesome.
I haven't seen
Marty in so long.
We can take these off?
Yeah.
Marty's great. I'm sad about him working in advertising, though. It actually could be worse. You could be working in venture capital.
Yeah, PC's fun.
Can be worse than that. It could be a podcaster. Think about that.
That's true.
Oh, God. Should we do the top stories? Sure. Do we have time? Have we burned up all our time? There are a couple of things I wanted to mention. Let's play this. Do you have the duplex call there? Anthony, so Google I/O and Microsoft Build were this week.
Yes.
We'll talk in a little bit because I think you have some thoughts about Android P.
Yeah.
You've been using that on your Pixel.
Yes.
But they did something that was actually very controversial. A lot of people said this is a bad idea. This is Google Duplex. Here's Sundar Pichai.
Between 10 and noon.
He's asking
what
his assistant.
Is the Google Assistant makes the call seamlessly in the background for you. So what you're going to hear is the Google Assistant actually calling a real salon to schedule the appointment for you. Let's listen.
So how can I help you? Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client.
That's the assistant!
I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
Wow.
Sure, give me one.
That's a real human!
Mm-hmm.
She has no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, what time are you looking for around? At 12 p.m. We do not have a 12 p.m. available. The closest we have to that is a 1:15.
Do you have anything between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.?
Depending on what service she would like, what service is she looking for?
Just a woman's haircut for now.
Okay, wow. We have a 10 o'clock.
10 a.m. is fine.
Okay, what's her first name?
The first name is Lisa.
Okay, perfect. So I will see Lisa at 10 o'clock on May 3rd.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Great.
Now,
have a great day. Bye.
First of all, I think that's...
Wow.
They won the Turing test.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Because
the assistant had no idea it was talking to a computer.
That is creepy.
I'm going to play another one for you that's even weirder.
This part of the demo. I tuned in a little bit later, so this is my first time seeing it. That is insane.
Just wild. They got a little heat because people... Well, they said, you're tricking people.
Yeah.
And Google said, and I thought this was a good idea. They said, we're going to disclose if we use this. And they say you will be able to use this by the end of the year. When you use it, it will say, this is Google Assistant calling for Kevin.
Hmm.
I don't know. We'll see what kind of disclosure they give. And what they did, they said, we have thousands of calls like this. But they didn't say what happens if the assistant gets thrown a complete curve. Let me see. I got to find the actual site. Because the Google site has some more of these. Yeah. Scroll down in the blog post. Play that second one, Duplex calling a restaurant. This is really hard. See if you could do this. I couldn't do it.
See, how may I help you?
Hi. I'd like to reserve a table for Wednesday the 7th.
That's the robot.
For 7 people?
It's wait a minute. Pause it for a second.
It's for 4 people.
So the human thought, he said Wednesday the 7th, and the human thought, oh, for 7 people, threw it a curveball,
right.
And it said, no, for 4 people. Hit, keep going.
4 people, when?
Next Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Oh, actually, we live here for, upper 5 people.
Okay, stop it. Let me tell you what that person just said, because the human is hard to understand.
I don't understand what the human said.
the it's restaurant...
a pretty thick accent.
Yeah. Did not phase the assistant. So I'll help you here. The restaurant said, we don't take reservations for parties less than 5 people.
Mm.
You don't need a reservation. Go on.
Before you can come.
How long is the wait usually to be seated?
Pause it.
When tomorrow or...
That is a huge leap it just made.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only did she throw it a curve saying you don't need a reservation because your party is less than 5 people, it then said, well, now I'll need to know how long the wait is.
Right.
How okay. early I should go. I don't know if I would ask that question. Keep going.
A weekday or?
For next Wednesday. The 7th.
Oh, no, it's not too busy. You can come for 4 people, okay?
Oh, I gotcha. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye-bye. It doesn't say goodbye. What doesn't it ever say goodbye?
I've it said thanks. To call. It said thanks.
Oh, did it? Okay. So here's the weird thing. When you use Google Assistant today, there's always a 2 to 3 second delay from when you say something to it actually recognizing it. This seems like it's real time.
Well, and Google in the blog post talks about something they call disfluencies. You heard it say, and...
And that's what it needs to calculate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Instead of saying working, it does what a human does when a human's thinking, So it's using those disfluencies.
But it still feels like a native, real conversation then, because there's not an awkward pause at that point.
I think if you were looking for evidence that it was a computer, you might have picked up on it, right? Because it's every once in a while, just very subtle, the inflection's a little odd, right? But those people weren't looking for a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't think they were talking to a computer.
I don't think you can say I'm Google calling on behalf of someone because then people will just screw with it.
They're gonna hang up.
That's going to be they'll hang up. They'll give it bad data. You know, you'll just say all kinds of random things.
Play a couple more because these are kind of amazing. I really feel like this is kind of a breakthrough in artificial intelligence. And I'm a big
Tuesday through Thursday we're open 11 to 2 and then reopen 4 to 9. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're open 11 to 9. And then Sunday, we're open.
That's fine. What they put that in there to show that sometimes they get extremely complex responses. Humans are made for that. What they've been using this for primarily is to call businesses and say, what are your hours? They're trying to get the hours accurate in Google Business, right?
Okay.
So that was the kind of answer they get, and they're able to handle it. Let's see. Let's see. Do this. Duplex calling a restaurant. This is a male voice. That's the other thing. These voices are really good.
Yeah, they're really good.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I'd like to reserve a table for Friday the 3rd.
It even is nasal.
Yeah.
Hold on one more.
Doesn't have a nose. Just how's it nasal?
Okay.
Okay.
Hold on one second. Okay. So Friday, November 3rd, how many people?
Two people.
By the way, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Four, as if it's thinking. It's not.
Right.
It could just as easily said 4 2 people.
Right.
But they put the 4.
Or just 2 people. Or two.
2 people. It makes it feel more like a human.
Yeah.
That's how you would say it.
Yeah.
What time?
At 5 p.m.
Okay. And your name?
The first name is Daniel. That's Daniel.
Okay. You're all set.
Okay, great. Thanks.
We'll see you next Friday. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.
It said bye. Just for you.
I was waiting for that.
Goodbye. Just for you. The couple of things Google's doing, they're adding what they call prosody. P-R-O-S-O-D-Y. So, you know, you have the computer-generated voice, and they did a demo of this. What you want to do is, the computer-generated voice is pretty good. They're based on real voice samples. Mm-hmm. Siri's the same way.
Sure.
So is Amazon's Echo. But what they then do is they have a human record in a natural way the same sentence, and they generate what they call prosody out of that, which is, I guess the best way to describe it, a natural human inflection, which they then lay on it. Hmm. One of the things they showed at the keynote, they got John Legend to do a lot of recording. And then Sundar Pichai asked the assistant, what's coming up today? And in John Legend's voice, it did the computer-generated answer.
Hmm.
And it was very good. So a lot of, I don't know why, but I guess people got scared because it got a lot of, Google got a lot of heat.
Yeah. Well, you saw what Adobe did a few months ago, right?
With the fakes?
The audio editing.
Yeah, how they can
put in any word they want. They recorded all of Obama's voice, and then they can just type a sentence out, and Obama says it.
Says whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I honestly am looking forward to this because it means I can retire in a couple of years and you'll never know.
Right.
Right? If we go suddenly
to audio podcasting.
If we suddenly go to audio podcasting, I'm not saying anything, but that's what I'm on.
It'd be kind of amazing,
actually. On an island somewhere. I know. Right?
Yeah.
The computer will do a better job than we do.
Reading the news
and
giving their opinion.
Yeah. And they got it. God knows they have enough voice samples for me to make something.
No
like
bad
that.
Jokes? I mean, could be great.
No, they have to write in the bad jokes. They're going to need the dad jokes or it wouldn't be Leo.
It's true.
Yeah. All right. I was going to show you. So Google sold this robot company.
Yes.
Boston Dynamics. They sold it to SunSun, to SoftBank.
Right.
They were at the TechCrunch Disrupt, and they announced that they're going to sell one of these robots, the dog version of the robot. It's called Spot Mini, to home users.
Why isn't that a cat? Why is that the dog version?
I don't know why you would want this in your house. This is terrifying. This is, they say it's their quietest robot ever, but it's not
a lot. What's the utility?
For if you're lonely?
I don't know. There's a lot better things.
This is autonomous, too, at this point. Notice how it's avoiding walls, it's making turns, because it's doing this all from a pre-navigated map. This is kind of sped up. Let me show you the slow, go back to the slowed down, so you can, what? It can climb stairs? Oh, Lord.
So, I'm curious, like, is there a sales page for this yet? Like,
not yet.
What are they selling here, though?
I don't know. Wouldn't you really want this?
Does it bring you the mail?
Yeah, sure. Actually, you came up with the best use for it.
I said to put fur on it.
Well, that's one thing. That would make it more friendly.
Oh, I said to ride it.
ride it!
Yeah, you should be able to ride it.
Ride it!
Yeah, you need to put some kind of fur-type thing on the outside, although that might be even creepier.
I want to ride my robot horse.
If you could ride that.
Around town!
It'll have like a 5-minute battery life at that point, though. It's like lugging us around.
There it is. Wait a minute.
Is that an arm on top of it?
Yeah, it can open doors. So one of the things about...
Oh, I saw that one. Hit play on that.
That's
cool. Have you seen that one?
No, let's see.
Yeah, this one's sweet.
It could bite you. So I love it. They have these all lined up, and then they activate one. This is in their office.
Oh, man. They just look like they can kill you.
They all do, don't they? Look at that. What's that thing in the right?
I don't like the pointy nose on that one.
They're not clearly
that,
whoever
the back one you can ride.
The human, yeah, definitely.
You can definitely ride that thing.
All it needs is stirrups and a cowboy hat. Wow.
If you could gallop with that, that would be a lot of fun.
Wouldn't
actually.
It? You know what? I think you've nailed it. This is better than Westworld.
This is the beginning of Westworld.
This is how Westworld started.
Like, yeah.
The thing is, this stuff happens faster than it. Both, you know, that what was the line, and I can't remember who said it, technology simultaneously happens slower than you want and faster than you expect.
Mm.
And I think that that's where we're kind of at that inflection point with these kinds of...
There it is. There it is.
Oh, Lord. It can, what is it doing?
It's dancing.
I want this in the house. Why don't they put a dinosaur head on it? Why?
That's kind of cool.
Oh, I know why. So it can do the dishes? Hey, if it can do the dishes, I'm all in.
Yeah, done.
Oh, yeah, that's going to smash.
It's going to pour you wine?
You know the first 20 times they did this, it crushed the glass in its little robot mouth.
Cut that in. A&W.
Very good.
What's the price point? These things have to be like $100,000?
Well, it's got to be expensive.
Yeah.
See, I whenever I see things like that, I go back to things like...
Oh, the banana's got it. Did you see that?
It slipped on the banana?
Oh, no, but this is just showing how you can get back up.
I think this is not a good thing to humiliate these guys.
No, because this is going to be archived on the internet, and the first thing they're going to do...
The first thing the robots are going to do is watch this YouTube footage and say, why did you do that to us? Oh, my God. I don't like how well it climbs stairs. And then you saw this. They've got robots now. It's on my screen where they you can feed you. Look at this. This is awesome. It's taking a Cheeto out of the bag.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
That one they did not expect to happen.
They need to work on that one.
At first, I thought it was one of those Radio Shack arms, you know, that was going to do it nice and slow. Oh, man.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. So you were talking a little bit about how you're excited about the digital wellness stuff. You know, it was funny because Apple had shareholders, which I've never heard of this, who went to Apple and said, you got to make your product not so addictive.
Right. I mean, we can all feel it, though, right? You feel it.
I'm up at 3 in the morning saying I don't want to be looking at this, and I am.
Yeah.
And I don't care if it's not blue. I'm still looking at it.
Right. Yeah. They fixed that problem. You're still looking at it.
Doesn't improve it.
Yeah. I mean, apparently you're supposed to release more melatonin if there's less blue.
I'm still awake looking at it. I don't care if it's blue or orange. I'm looking at it.
Well, these features are cool, though, because they tell you if you've been using your apps too much. They start to gray out the icon as you use them too much. I mean, there's a lot of subtle little hints to say back away from the phone.
There's now a setting on YouTube that you can say, hey, if I've watched this after 3 hours, please tell me to take a break and go outside.
Well, you can do it for all apps now.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
that's the app
great.
Timer he's talking
about.
Yeah,
exactly.
You're close to your daily time limit.
That is so brilliant. I'm going to use this all the time. Shush is cool.
That's actually something the Motorola X had.
Yeah, just flip it over and it mutes everything. Yeah.
Here's the one I think is most interesting. They call this wind down. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and show this.
And when that time arrives, it will switch on do not disturb and fade the screen to grayscale.
Yeah. I learned this from you.
Which is far less stimulating for the brain.
The grayscale thing?
Yes. Didn't you post a thing saying make your screen black and white? It's less addictive?
I might have tweeted it, but I got it from someone else.
I'm sure you didn't invent it, but still.
I did not invent that.
I tried it, and it is. Your phone is so much more boring if it's black and white. Yeah. It is not at all compelling.
Yeah, the icons jump out. They invite you in to use them. And it's
like,
it's too much. This is great, though.
That's what this will do.
I bet you Apple does the same thing. I have a feeling this is coming for Apple as well.
Oh, yeah.
WWDC, I think they'll announce something. Yeah.
Well, that's the funny thing. In Android P, they copied the best feature of iOS on the iPhone X. You could swipe past. You don't have to have a back button anymore.
Nobody knows this.
Nobody knows.
Should I show you? Show this. Because you showed this to me, and I'm like,
Kevin
what?
Went, what?
Yeah, like you're
I've never seen that before. So this is an iPhone X. At the bottom, it doesn't, you know, one of the reasons you can't tell it can do this is there's no indicator, but you can just swipe to previous apps.
I feel like you're a magician now.
It's
this
like
is amazing.
But that's the best feature of
it's
iPhone
cool.
10.
I didn't even know that.
Because the iPhone never had a back button. In fact, remember we used to mock Android because they had a back button?
Right, right.
But this, you do need a back button. This is a fabulous feature. So Android P has that. It's like as soon as Apple figured it out, Google said,
copying each other.
And that's okay.
It's okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people that's going to say, oh, you copied Apple or, oh, Apple, you copied. No, it makes it better for everybody.
Yeah.
All right. You are going to talk about cryptocurrency.
Yeah,
I'm very excited.
About buying crypto, securing it, secure wallets, all that good stuff.
Because I need some help.
You lost a lot of money.
A little money.
Like.
What's Bitcoin at right now?
$9,000? $10,000? What's it at right now?
So I lost $70,000.
You still have the wallet file.
I still have the file. Hope. I just
there's
can't get
hope.
Into
we
it.
We've got to figure out Leo's password.
Maybe you can help me. We're also
$8,400 right now.
Oh, see, it was only really an issue when it was up to $20,000.
Well, here's the deal, though. You had Bitcoin, and you would have gotten that hard fork, so you would have also had Bitcoin Cash as well.
I have both.
No, but with those coins that you lost, that would have forked as
but
well.
But I could do that now, right?
If
I could get into it.
Yeah.
I could. So you have to help me with that, too. I think you go to...
I don't know your password.
No. I mean, if I could get in.
Yeah, if we can get in, I help you with the fork stuff. Yeah,
then because you have the new Bitcoin, you have...
Yeah,
you have,
pull that back up again. We can see how much Bitcoin Cash is worth. So you would have about $1,500 worth of the equal amount of coins. So if you had 10 coins, so it's another...
$10,000.
More than that. 1,500 coins. So, yeah. 15 grand.
You know who's really mad at me? My wife.
Yeah. I bet.
She said,
it's a lot of money.
And my son, Henry, keeps saying, Dad, have you unlocked your wallet yet? Because I told him, if you can unlock it, I'll give you a Bitcoin.
And what did you say, like, did you give me any of your old passwords? Like,
no.
Did you give me any help at all?
No. But you're going to help me. You're going to help me. I'm
if
not you giving
you a Bitcoin.
If you
can break this encryption.
Yeah. If you can just
that's
break
a hard
my,
one.
My strong public key crypto. And we're going to talk with Dale Baskin of DP Review about 360-degree
that's cool.
photography. Yeah, very, very cool.
I checked out the camera.
We got one of his recommendations here. But first, let's talk about Rocket Mortgage. I know Kevin Rose doesn't need to get a home loan when he wants to buy a house, but maybe you do. I know I do. In fact, when we bought our house 4 years ago, we did the old-fashioned thing. You know, went go to the bank, and you say, please, can I have some money? And he says, sure, here's... First, the funny thing is he had a clipboard, and he went like this, and he said, well, let's look at some of the rates. They were on printed, on like a daily printout, like a phone book of rates. And then he says, here's the 20-page application. Go home and fill it out. And you have to go to the attic. You got to get pay stubs. You got to find out what you know, where you used to live, all this stuff, all this research. And the worst part about doing this, I don't know why, and I think it was maybe because, I don't know why. Maybe because they didn't like the way I look. But they kept coming back and saying, well, now we'd like to know, we'd like bank statements from 2010. Do you have those? And 2 months it took us to get a home loan for the house we live in today. Not anymore. Next time, I'm going to Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans, best lender in the country, number one lender in the country, not only in volume of loans, but in customer satisfaction. 8 years in a row, number one as primary mortgage origination, according to J.D. Power. Number one since 2010. 4 years in a row for mortgage servicing. And the nice thing about it is they're geeks. Dan Harmon and his crew there at Quicken Loans, they are technologists, and they realize this whole idea of going to a bank, dopey.
I love it when companies do this. They take these big, old, kludgy, 20-page
and they fix it.
And they fix it. Yeah, it's great.
So this process is so easy. You can do it on your phone. You could do it. It's so fast, you could do it at an open house. You answer a few basic questions you already know the answer to. Then they go out, because they have relationships with all the financial institutions. They go out, get what they need, crunch the numbers based on your income, your assets, and your credit. They will tell you this is what you qualify for. You choose the rate, the term, the down payment. By the way, they have excellent rates. They have all the rates. They have every possible loan. So you're going to get a great choice. And all of that, remember, it took me 2 months to get that. All of that takes 10 minutes or less. And you do it on your phone. You could do it at an open house. You could do it on your couch. It is awesome. I want you to go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Start, get the account set up. That way it'll take less, just take a few minutes. And the next time you're at a house and you say, oh, this is beautiful. The price is right. Let's buy this. You can show the realtor before you leave that open house. We're approved. And they have for the old-fashioned realtors, they have a button that says, print a letter that you can show the realtor.
So you do it finding a house,
you could do it now. You could
because the old way was you find the house first, and then you have to kind of
So you don't know because you don't.
I just pay
you
with Bitcoin,
money. But but what used to be is you would do something called pre-qualify because then you go in with a letter.
I remember that.
You remember that? I'm good for the money, and that does that's important. If you're buying a house, it's really a seller's market these days. Mm-hmm. You need to go. I've lost houses because we didn't have that pre-qualification letter, all of that. This is the easiest way. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. They're an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. And we thank them so much for making the new screensavers possible. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. All right, let's get Dale Baskin up on the Super Spectra Viewatron. Hey, Dale.
Hey, Dale.
Hey, Leo. Hey, Kevin. It's great to be back.
Do you know Kevin Rose, Dale?
We've never met before. This is the first time.
Well, I'm a big fan of your site, so.
Fantastic. Good to hear.
Yeah. You have met other members of our team, like Alex Lindsay, because you and Alex were talking about that, what was it, $60,000 360-degree camera Nokia made?
Yeah, it was a couple years ago at NAB. I ran into Alex, and he was talking a lot about this Nokia camera in the earlier days of 360 photography. This was a bit of a beast. I think it had something like 30 cameras on it, and it had spatial audio, and it cost something like $60,000, but it was pretty good.
Nokia stopped selling it, so it mustn't have been much. Although I know Alex bought three. Alex had three or four, as I remember.
You don't find those at the Best Buy.
But there is something it did that the cameras we're going to talk about won't do. And that you said it, the spatial audio. And it's one thing to take a 360-degree image. Are there any cameras now that will also do 360-degree audio?
There are various ones. In fact, you have the Ricoh Theta there on the counter in front of you.
Yeah. This is my first 360-degree camera.
That has more of a surround audio.
Yeah.
And it turns out that's pretty important with 360 video, at least.
So that if you are watching a video with your headset or even on YouTube and you turn around, the sound comes from the proper direction. This is kind of cool. This 360 was the first I bought. It was the first one under $400. And the way they did it, they just have two cameras with super fisheye picture lens, right? So this is everything in front, everything in back. And then you use special software from Ricoh to stitch it together. And I loved it because it would stitch your hand out of the picture. Because that's one thing about 360 cameras. Whatever's at the bottom always looks kind of weird, right? Kind
of. Yes, most of these will create a little bit of a bubble around which everything gets stitched out. So it looks fairly natural.
So this was a first generation. And you say you still like it?
We still like that. There's a newer version. It's called the Theta V, which is higher resolution, better audio. It turns out part of the reason this one is so popular is its simplicity.
Right.
Anybody can use it. You don't have to understand how it works. You hold it up. You press the button. You look at your phone. The images appear, and you hit share to go to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever your shareable destination of choice happens to be.
So one question I had about these cameras in general that has stopped me from ever buying one is the software or the output of it, is that require proprietary software to then play around in, or is that a standard, is it an open standard?
There are different answers to that question. Most manufacturers do have some kind of solution, whether it's a software on the desktop or an app on a smartphone that does all of the stitching for you. Some of them just do it in camera. There are certainly sources, open source software packages that will let you take data from any of these stitching. For simplicity, it's just easier to use the manufacturer's software.
My biggest concern is, 10 years from now, we try and view our images incompatible.
Well, show it again, Anthony. Before you process it, this is what the pictures look like. Actually, on the Theta, it looks even worse. It looks like two spheres, left and right.
It's like VR before you actually go into VR.
Once you convert it. And the good news, though, is YouTube and Facebook both generally support these formats.
Right? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, sometimes it's browser specific. I know for a while I could not for the life of me get any of it to work on Safari on a Macintosh. That seems to have worked itself out a little bit. So if you ever run into these online and it just doesn't work, switch to something like Chrome and very possibly it'll work for you.
Wow, it's cool stuff though. Look at those photos.
I don't know what you think of this one, Dale. The latest Gear 360 from Samsung came out last year, I think.
I haven't used that one personally, but one of my colleagues has it, really likes it. For the most part, one truism of all of these consumer cameras is they'll all take a reasonably good 360 photo. It's not going to be the level of quality, the level of detail you're accustomed to on, a DSLR or a mirrorless camera.
Yeah, it comes down to the resolution, right? This is with the Gear 360. We were in Japan at
so beautiful.
This is the most famous of all the Japanese gardens at the Adachi Museum. It's consistently won the best, garden prize. And what's neat about it, and you really can only see it in a 360, is they bought this hillside. This is a hillside outside the property that they bought so that nobody would put antennas or towers. And you see, you can hardly see this, but there's a little waterfall there. It is this is something that a regular image does not capture.
Mm-hmm.
But a 360 does a pretty good job of giving you a sense of being there. That was with the Gear 360. So is that what the difference is in resolution? What is the difference in quality?
Well, what you'll get with a more expensive camera is probably, quite literally, more cameras. So most of the sensors used in these things are fairly off the shelf. Individual companies are not making them. So if you have two lenses facing 180 degrees apart from each other, you'll get more resolution. If you have four cameras at the corners that are doing more overlap, giving you more resolution, which is why the Nokia we talked about was so nice. I don't remember the number of cameras that had, but it was like a ton of cameras.
But that's why it was also why it was $60,000.
That's why it's expensive as well.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you like these days? What are the better cameras these days for people if they want to get into this?
Yeah, so these days, the thing we're really watching are what we're thinking of as the next generation 360 cameras. The challenge with the original ones is your footage, your photos or your video require some level of user participation. Either you need somebody to put on one of these and start turning their head in a circle, which isn't always easy, or somebody has to go onto a page and drag around. And that can be really fun, except sometimes they actually look exactly the opposite direction of where the interesting thing is. Mm. So there's a number of new cameras, and two of the ones I have with me today are from a company called Rilo, which I have on my left, and GoPro, which you've heard of, I'm sure, the GoPro Fusion. These are also 360 cameras, but where they differ is in the software, and the software is what's really making the difference. If you can imagine, I'm still taking a 360 photo or video with this, but instead of requiring my user to search around and find what's interesting, I can go in with a simple app on an iPhone or an Android phone, and I can essentially select an area that would be a 16:9 high definition video area, and I can tell the camera where to point. And I think we've got an example coming up here of a skier. I gave this camera right here to one of my friends when he went skiing, and he literally held it in his hand going down the slopes. The camera is not moving here. The person holding it is moving left and right. The skier ahead is moving left and right. And he basically went in afterwards, tapped on that skier, and just said, follow this object.
Oh, could you then look around while you're looking at this, or are you locked into that?
Well, you have different options for how to export. You can still export it in a way where people have that option, yes.
Right.
But what this does is it really allows you to get a very professional look, something you can share very easily on social media that looks great. And it just works. It looks fantastic, like you were panning around with a camera as you were skiing.
Well, also, I got to say, this is a good camera. The resolution looks 4K. I mean, it looks really high quality.
Yeah, if you look at it on a 50-inch television screen, you'll be able to tell. But the reality is the vast majority of people are going to look at this on a phone screen, maybe a tablet. Right. And so if it's a little below resolution, nobody will notice.
The other thing I like about that is you can look at it normally. So, I mean, that's, as Kevin pointed out, that's one of the disadvantages of this is it's kind of a weird format and it requires some effort on the part of the user. That one you just look at like a TV, right?
Yeah. And so can you just export it as like a standard movie file at that point?
Yes, absolutely.
That's cool. So you pick your path.
As a standard movie file. In fact, I think we're bringing up a video here that may actually show how the selection is done. In this case, just tapping.
Oh, that's neat.
You just hit follow this.
You can say follow this. Oh, so it's not even a very manual process. It's wow.
Right. You don't have you don't have to navigate it. You say follow this object, and it just follows the object.
How much is this camera?
These are a little more expensive. This is about $499 for the Rilo, which is really our favorite right now because it's so simple. Anybody can use it. And then the GoPro is around $699. Honestly, it's a little bit better quality, probably more powerful software. But for convenience and ease of use, we love this Rilo.
Cool.
So the GoPro, a little more expensive, a little better quality, a little better software. Yeah. That's the GoPro Fusion.
The GoPro Fusion, right. And if I turn it sideways, you can see it's actually got the two lenses on either side.
Okay. So it's okay. I'm thinking maybe I should upgrade that Samsung 360 to one of these. Yeah. These look pretty
cool. Yeah, these new cameras are a ton of fun if you haven't played with them. The ability to essentially direct where the camera is pointing after the fact and make it look like a professional cameraman is pointing things around on a gimbal is amazing.
Look, can I ask you, like, what do you use this for outside of, like, for me, I think vacation's no-brainer.
Yeah, that's the only time
like,
I ever use
action
it.
Action sports, no-brainer.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, skiing, snowboarding, things like that.
You use it a lot the first day.
Yeah.
That's, like, well, that's for instance, Zelda, your baby, you want pictures of your baby, but do you really need 360-degree pictures of your baby?
Right.
No.
Especially when the house is torn apart like
it is. You don't want to see back there. Yeah.
But it can be a very immersive experience. I know one of the things that we did on our site when the Amazon spheres opened with, I don't know if everyone's familiar with those, but they're these giant spherical biosphere type buildings in Seattle. One of our photographers actually went in, and I think on the bottom of this page you have right here, there's a YouTube video. He actually walked through the spheres with the 360 camera on. And it's really an amazing way to experience the spheres. If you can't come to Seattle, if you can't come visit them, you can literally do a walkthrough. And as the camera's going through, you can decide where to look. And you
this
can see what that
good.
Looks
That's
like.
Cool.
Yeah, when I was in the Galapagos last year, I brought my Samsung 360. And that's a case where somebody may not get there, but they can have an experience of what it's like to walk through these islands or ride in a Zodiac and look for penguins. in a 360 means you have a little agency as the viewer as to what to look at. Mm-hmm. I think there's a, it's a specialty product.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool. I like it that you could play it back on YouTube and Facebook now.
So yeah.
You don't have to wear
one
of those
very easy
visors.
Well, then you just upload it and you don't have to worry about maintaining the software. It's
right.
There to stay.
It's there to stay.
As long as they're around.
As long as YouTube supports
right, exactly.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen to Google.
And Google, excuse me, not Google, but GoPro has a very interesting way of allowing you to do it. You don't even have to press that little button you saw to have it follow something. You can play back the video and essentially just follow it with your phone as it's going.
Oh,
and
crazy.
Based on where you point it, it will pan.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Another gadget.
Which would you get?
You know what?
He's going
to
buy one.
I've been recommending the Rilo to people.
Okay.
I think it's so compact. In fact, if I take it out of its case here, I can show you.
It's tiny.
It really is very tiny.
Yeah.
This is just a case with a handle. It's so simple to use that I can hand it to somebody and say, just hold this thing up, press the button. It actually doesn't even matter if they point it in the right place because you can decide later where you want to point it.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, if you're holding it right in front of you, it's just going to get...
Yeah.
You got to kind of have to go like this, though, right?
You know that I'm taking
right a picture... helmet.
When I'm taking a picture with my Samsung, you know I'm taking it because I'm holding it like the Statue
right.
of Liberty
right.
over my
right.
head, and you feel kind of like a dork as you're walking
is
around.
Is there backpacks with, like, a little thing on, or...
That's worse!
I know, the great thing is, it has... If I can get this thing back down, you probably can't see it very well here, but it's basically got a standard GoPro attachment.
Oh. Mm.
So if you've got something that you can attach a GoPro or an action camera to, you can attach this just as easily. So skiing, climbing, kayaking, they even have a waterproof case if you want to take it underwater. It really is a great, I mean, it's essentially an action camera or a vacation camera, as you said, but it's a way of capturing those types of events and sharing them in either a more immersive or a more flexible way than you had before.
Yeah, cool.
I think I might get the Rilo. $499?
$499 for the Rilo. It's a fantastic product, but this GoPro is no slouch either, as you would imagine.
$200 more for the GoPro.
Yeah.
A couple hundred dollars more.
Yeah. Well, Dale, always a pleasure. You're really a great inspiration to us. You make me spend money every time you're on.
I guess not necessarily our goal, but it sounds like you've got gear acquisition syndrome.
I have gas.
You have gas.
I do, absolutely. And, of course, before I buy anything, I always go to dpreview.com.
It's a great site.
It is actually my
Bible.
For
so many years, it's been my source.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it's our Bible. Thank you so much. It's great to see you once again, Dale.
All right, thank you, guys.
Take care. Thanks. Coming up, we're going to do some cryptocurrency stuff.
Yeah, let's do it.
Kevin is the cryptocurrency master. He's going to show us everything you need to know, including better ways to save, to secure your cryptocurrency so you don't forget your password.
Like this guy.
But first, Jason Howell spent last week at Google I.O. this past week, and it turns out one of his favorite spots is something called the sandbox tent. Watch.
Google really knows how to throw a party. Or a developer conference. Honestly, if you've ever been to Google I.O. before, you might have a hard time finding a difference between the two. It's a blast, to say the least. One of my favorite parts of Google I.O. is perusing the sandbox tents. Those are themed areas that showcase some of the more interesting examples of cutting-edge uses of its newest technology. So I've compiled a list of my 9 favorite discoveries while roaming through the Google I.O. sandboxes. Number 1, a robot made this poster for me. That's right. This unique piece of art was designed for me alone inside the Google Assistant tent, where they were showcasing the Assistant SDK for hardware devices. This giant plotter that was armed with 4 color markers was connected to an Assistant speaker below it, meaning anyone could bark a command like, draw purple squares, and the plotter would respond. And in the end, you walked away with a robotically creative work of art. Number 2, in the accessibility tent, Google showed off its Liftware utensil line to make eating easier for those who might be suffering from conditions like Parkinson's disease. The handle of this Liftware Steady Spoon has a sensor inside that detects rapid hand tremor movements and then activates 2 motors to counteract the shaking that will then stabilize the spoon in use. They also showed the Liftware level that's aimed at those with limited hand and arm mobility that actually keeps the spoon level at all times, regardless of how you move it. Number 3, also in the accessibility tent was a demonstration of the new Lookout app for Pixel devices, newly announced on Oreo or Android P. Launching this summer, Lookout speaks aloud what it sees, helping those with visual impairments hear and understand the world around them. It can even read text from a book or announce where the exit sign is located in the room.
Choose a green at 12 o'clock. First at 12 o'clock. Palazzo. Suet. At 1 o'clock. Food. Wine glass at 1 o'clock.
Number 4. Similar to Lookout is Google's updated AR app. That's Google Lens. The update, which releases by the end of this month, has a new active scanning mode for recognizing objects that it sees on the fly and then pulling back search results that match to them. So if you think that blouse is to die for, but you don't know where to find it, just point Lens at it and you might get lucky or at the very least find a knockoff that's nearly as good. Number 5. Also in the AR tent was a gameplay demonstration of one of Google's new announcements for AR Core called Cloud Anchor. This is how AR can become a shared experience on multiple devices. In this case, two separate phones connect to and interact with the same virtual objects in the surrounding space, making something like this two-player versus style catapult game possible. It was a ton of fun to play. Number 6, and also utilizing Cloud Anchors, is an app called Just a Line that kind of felt a little like Tilt Brush in the sense that you can draw on the virtual space that surrounds you in a three-dimensional canvas. The Cloud Anchors come into play by allowing anyone with a phone to participate in the same space. Everyone's just kind of scribbling to fill in the area and you can walk around and get up close. I'm super pumped to see what third-party developers do with this Cloud Anchor technology. Number 7, in the experiments tent, something called Move Mirror. There's a tiny phone camera that's driving a human-sized screen. You, a human, stand in front of the phone camera and strike a pose, any pose, and the TensorFlow pattern matching algorithm will locate images from its 90,000 image library that match your pose. They even created for me a short animated GIF to prove that I am indeed a big nerd. Number 8. Also in the experiments tent was this nifty piece of hardware called NSynth Super. NSynth, or Neurosynthesizer, uses neural networks to combine the qualities of four distinct sounds into entirely new models, depending on where your finger is dragged on the XY control surface. It's powered by a Raspberry Pi underneath, they told me, but it's not yet a consumer product, though everything needed to build one is open source. I'm thinking maybe something for know-how. By the way, you know what I want for my birthday. And finally, number 9 was found in the artificial intelligence tent, and it's something you can play with right now, and you'll want to because it's really fun. It's a game called Semantris. It's actually a couple of games, but it's based on a slightly modified version of Google's Smart Reply technology used to create this game that highlights a word that's then stacked on top of other words, and your job is to name the first word that comes to your mind based on that highlighted word. If you draw a good enough connection between the two words, that word is then eliminated and you get to continue, but you don't want that stack to get too tall. Do a search for Semantris and say goodbye to your day. My name is Jason Howell, and you can find me talking all about Google and Android on, well, All About Android and Tech News Weekly here on twit.tv.
Very neat. This is the kind of stuff you see every day, though, probably, right?
What? These
like innovative new stuff?
A lot of these are just hobbies, though, and not really companies.
That's what they kind of look like.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody's 20% time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nevertheless, some of them do become companies.
That's true.
How do you, as a venture capitalist, because I know you still do some investing.
Sure.
And you've been very successful in your previous investments. How do you know if something's going to be a success or not?
Honestly, in the early days, it's based largely on the entrepreneur.
Not the product.
I mean, somewhat you have to love the product or the idea in general, but you have to love the founder more.
It's the team.
Yeah. So it's more a bet on the team. And,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because they may have to pivot anyway, right?
That's right.
You never know.
Oftentimes do.
Yeah. You've pivoted a few times.
A handful. Quite a few times.
Let's talk cryptocurrency.
Yes.
Now, before we get into this, you're not a cryptocurrency buyer. I mean, you don't have a bunch of Bitcoin in your closet.
I don't. No, I let somebody handle that in terms of just doing a fund. That
you
buys
mentioned
it
there's
on my...
Bitcoin or cryptocurrency hedge funds?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so my understanding of a hedge fund is it's something to... I don't know. What is a hedge fund? My understanding comes from watching TV, so I probably don't have the best understanding of it. But it's an investment vehicle that's designed to do well when other vehicles are not doing so well.
Well, these guys are going out and buying currencies either before they're released, so like pre-ICO, or at the ICO.
And you trust them and their judgment.
They're just connected and running into all the founders and doing all the heavy lifting. So you pay a fee for that, but they go off off and go out and do it on your behalf.
It's probably not a bad idea.
Well, so it's just like you don't store any of the keys. Like someone could hold me for ransom and I don't have any coins to give them. Like I just like that fact that.
Jeez, don't kidnap Kevin.
It's happened. Did you hear about that guy that got kidnapped?
No.
$1 million they held him up for.
And they wanted Bitcoin?
Bitcoin. And they sent, this was probably a couple months back. They sent him $1 million.
Now it's gotten out of hand.
It's gotten crazy.
I'll take Bitcoin. Well, the advantage of Bitcoin, like cash, it's anonymous. No one knows.
Well, you have a bunch of it, and you're located over here in Petaluma, and there's not a lot of security here.
I can't get to it, yeah.
So if you wanted to...
So I think a lot of the people watching...
I'm just kidding.
Don't kidnap me. I don't know my password. That would be the most pathetic thing. I'm kidnapped. I'm sitting there
and
in
you
my
have
underwear,
no cryptocurrency.
Tied up, and I'm saying, but I don't know the password. I can't give you anything. I'll give you the wallet. You can figure out the password. So most people don't do what I did. But this was early on, and there things like Coinbase didn't exist.
Yeah.
I just downloaded software, created a wallet, and then gave people my number. You have a public number, which can also be a QR code, and people could donate.
Right.
In this case, it was donating to TWIP, or people can give you money based on that number. Nowadays, would you do it that way?
In terms of
like if you wanted to get into a cryptocurrency, would you create your own wallet?
I would probably start by, well, it depends on which currency you want to purchase.
I think a lot of people say, well, I'm just going to go to Coinbase and create an account there, right?
It is the easiest way to do things, for sure.
Now, there are people who used Mt. Gox in the past. They lost every bit of their Bitcoin because Mt. Gox disappeared. And that we've seen this happen before. So there's a certain amount of trust involved.
That's right.
With giving somebody
your wallet. And for me, you know, I've used Coinbase a lot in the past to purchase, but then I immediately move it off-site and into my own kind of cold storage using something like one of these hardware keys.
Oh, interesting. So you can do that. You don't have to leave the wallet.
That's right. That's right. So you can just transfer it out and get it out of there right away.
And their limitation is that they only sell what? Bitcoin, Ethereum.
Yeah, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, and Litecoin.
That's it.
That's it. For now. They've announced they're going to do a bunch more, and they'll probably support some of the tokens as well.
I've seen there's hundreds of
these. I mean, here's cryptocurrency market cap, and I mean, there's
a great
several
site.
Thousands.
Yeah.
He 1,610 total cryptocurrencies that they're tracking. But this is a great example of a site that you can come to, and let's just say you've heard about something, like let's say Neil, for example. Or let's use Monero. This is one of the really privacy coins that are out there. And you're like, I want to own some Monero. How do I go out and buy this? Well, you can't buy it on Coinbase, right? Like, it's not available. So what you do is you just click on the Markets tab, and you can see where it's trading. And then what I do is I typically look for some of these trading partners that have high volume. So see, these are some of the big ones here. You know, Binance is doing $7 million
a day. I wanted to buy some Stellar Lumens.
Let's
couldn't,
look at that.
But I set up a... Coinbase account and then bought some Bitcoin and then sold and then went to Binance, which does sell Stellar.
Yeah, so
Lumens.
Here's Stellar right here.
And then you buy, so it's a complicated process.
So you'd have to set up a Binance account.
Yeah, I have Binance and Coinbase.
Right, so you start with Coinbase, like you said. You get
and they
it, you
take
transfer.
Dollars at Coinbase, so you give them dollars.
Right, you can use a credit card, you can use a bank account, things like that.
And then you buy Bitcoin.
That's right.
And then you transfer it to somebody else or Binance?
Yeah, so you transfer it to Binance. So if you look here, but check this out. See where it says pair?
Yeah.
So you can see that there's a Stellar Bitcoin pair. So you can go straight from Bitcoin directly into Stellar.
Okay.
So you wouldn't go to Coinbase and buy something like Litecoin because they're not going to be paired up.
Yeah.
You'd have to then go Litecoin, Bitcoin, and then Stellar.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of hurdles to get through. But then where do you hold this? So you'd have to set up a wallet locally, right?
Like, so what is a Bitcoin wallet? It's not like a wallet where you have money.
No, it's just
in
a piece of software that's running on your computer.
It's software.
Right. So you have your private
and ultimately
keys.
It's a file, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a file. It's a single file, typically a .dat file, wallet.dat. And it's encrypted and stored locally on your computer.
And
so
in fact, there's
the keys for that.
There's no money in the wallet.dat file. There's merely your
private key.
Private key. It's a private key file, just like a PGP private key file.
Exactly.
Would be. And what you do, as when I was trying to recover my wallet, is you then load that wallet.dat file in there. It has to download the entire ledger, the blockchain of transactions, at least for Bitcoin, which is hundreds of gigabytes.
Unless it's a light wallet, and it just points to the network.
Some of them
then,
are a little better than
that's
this.
That's right.
Yeah. They've figured out this was a liability.
Well, it takes forever. It can take multiple
days.
Yeah. When I was setting up Monero, it was like 3 days.
And then it has to walk through the ledger
and look for your transactions
and find your transactions.
That's right.
And at the end of another day, it'll say, oh yeah, I found 7.57 Bitcoin.
Right.
Now what's your password?
Well, exactly. You'd have to have your password first.
So what's a better way to do this?
So there's a few things. First thing I want to recommend to everyone is that if you're serious about this stuff and you start buying it, you should get a separate email account for where you have all of your communications related
Why
to this.
Why is that?
Well, if you think about it, the ways to unlock your account and to reset it are typically by email or a text message to your phone. And so if you have a Coinbase account, those emails are going to be sent to your primary email account. And a lot of people are going to know what your primary email is because you're using it to have conversations. So what I recommend doing, get a separate Gmail account.
They're free.
Yeah, they're free. Create something obscure so no one's going to guess it.
Don't make it KevinRose at gmail.com.
Right, or Leo's Crypto at Gmail.
That's even better, yeah.
And then enable their extra enhanced security.
Okay.
So that requires one of these guys here. These are different hardware keys. This one slides into a USB. This one is Bluetooth here.
These are also crypto-based. These are basically key validations. I have a YubiKey and a Bluetooth-based ones. They require you have one Bluetooth for phones like iPhones that don't support a USB port or NFC.
Yeah, so they'll have Google will actually recommend you these three. These are the three that I bought via Google. And then you enable that on your account. Now, you have to have this. If you lose it, it's going to be a lot harder to get into your account.
Yeah.
So that will secure your email account. So that's
but that's good. You want it to be hard. That's going to be hard for
and
the
you
bad
can do
guy.
This even if you're not in a cryptocurrency, right?
Yeah,
like
but
you
it,
just,
yeah.
If
it's
you're
a pain
paranoid,
in the butt.
Yeah. Okay, second thing is...
this is two-factor plus.
That's
this
right.
This is even stronger than just two-factor.
Right, which is just like a text to your phone or something
for
like
most
that.
People, two-factor is sufficient. But if you're storing millions of dollars in Bitcoin, you want to make it hard to get.
So the next thing is software-based wallets. So this is an example of one that I like called Jax. And the reason I like this wallet is because it supports so many different coins.
Yeah, so my Bitcoin wallet only supports Bitcoin.
That's right. So you can go in here and say wallets, and then look at all these different coins that you can enable here.
Okay.
So you can say, I have some Augur here. Some of these are actually tokens and not real currencies.
Is Jax Mac only or Mac Windows?
I believe Windows as well.
Okay.
So Ethereum Classic, Litecoin. You just enable them, and then you can switch between them at the top here. So you can say, how many ETH do I have? Obviously, this is just a test account, so there's not going to be any stored
in
here.
And that QR code you see there is something you can give to people?
Yeah, so this is your address.
That's how they send you money.
Right, so you can just copy it right there. So I just copied it to the clipboard. You can see
I can text it to them and say, send me money.
Right, exactly.
And if you have their number, you press that send button, you can send them.
You hit send, you put in their address right there. Let's say that's a dummy address. You type in how many ETH, I want to send them 4 ETH. And then hit send, and it goes right over to them.
Now, one thing I noticed is there's a transaction cost for all of these.
That's right.
And it's variable. The more you pay, the faster, at least on Bitcoin, the faster the transaction happens.
That's right. But here's the thing that's interesting about this, though. When you set up this wallet for the first time, there is one set of different words that they give you to restore this wallet.
Oh.
So you have to write down those words. You have to store them in something
it's a
like
backup code.
LastPass, 1Password, things like that. An alternative to
I wished I had used that wallet.
That would check this out.
What's
so this?
This
is called CryptoSteal. So you
this
put
is
your
hysterical.
Words.
Yeah. This is not a digital wallet.
No.
This is
you slide
that's
those
your passphrase.
That's your passphrase. And you slide those in one at a time. And this is just a dummy phrase. You can't try this at home. You're not going to get anything out of it. But you slide them in, and then you keep that in a safety deposit box
you
or anything you
seal
want.
Seal it up. You
can put a lock
down.
On there.
Now, if somebody got this, that would be this is
that's
this
right.
This is something to remember with these. If somebody gets this,
right.
They've got your wallet. They've got your.
This is like holding cash in your hand.
It's
basically.
Like yeah.
So someone took this and they put it in a. They created this big fire pit. And they put it in, and they let it sit in there for like 30 minutes, no problem. They threw off a balcony that was like 10 stories high, no problem.
So that, see, it's, again,
it's pretty hardcore.
If Leo had put his passphrase into this, I would be, you know, $70,000 richer right now.
You got to remember that passphrase. It's killing me. So that's
okay, that's, so that's what's that called?
Yeah, this is called CryptoSteal.
CryptoSteal.
It's not cheap. This is like $150 or somewhere around there.
You could also write it on a piece of paper and put it in a safe deposit box.
Right. So if people that have it on a piece of paper, obviously if there's a flood, there's things like that, you know, that kind of goes away. There it is. Okay. How much is the price now? I think they raised the price. $199?
Wow.
Yeah, $199.
But it's kind of a neat artifact.
It's pretty cool.
This is the kind of thing Axe would have in Billions.
Exactly.
You know, in Billions the other night, a guy did him a favor, and he handed him a USB stick. He said, here's a stick. There's a million on it in Bitcoin. He never gave him the passphrase, though.
That's right.
So
you need the passphrase.
You need the passphrase.
But
you could do that, right? I could give you a USB device with a Bitcoin wallet on it.
Oh, this right here. That's what these are right here.
This is the stick?
Yeah, so that's a Ledger hardware wallet, and this is a Trezor hardware wallet. And if you take a look, I can show you what it looks like when they light. Yeah, there you go.
So this have a screen? What's the screen
for? The screen is for getting your PIN and putting your PIN in as well to unlock it. So all of your private keys are encrypted and stored on this device. And it also has a unique phrase. So if it gets damaged or smashed, you can buy a new one and restore it with that unique phrase.
Okay.
And then you can take a look at all the different currencies that this supports.
So the reason you would carry this around is so that I could, like, have dinner with you and then show you my QR code? Is that on here?
Well, no. Actually, I think
What's this for?
Well, it encrypts everything on this little device, so it gets it off of your computer. So many people are worried about their computer becoming compromised because they're connected to the internet.
Yeah.
And so this is actually, you unplug it from USB. There's no internet connectivity. Everything is stored on there. You throw it in your own home personal vault or wherever you like, safety deposit box. And so if you look at the software right here, this is the Trezor software. It's plugged in via USB, and then here are all the different coins that it supports. So you can say, I have some Litecoin, whatever it may be. Switch over here. It's talking to the USB device. Now look at the – hold up the USB
device.
Now
I have to enter my magic PIN.
Yeah, so if you look at the USB – so that's the – it randomizes the arrangement of characters.
Oh, wow.
So I know my PIN –
So you couldn't even figure out what the – where the fingerprint juice was.
Right, so
– how do I enter it?
So you do it on the desktop. So look at the desktop now.
Oh.
So now I just – Now I do the arrangement. I think it was this one here.
Oh, so
was
I
the
get it.
One?
So on the desktop, you're just getting dots. On the key, you're getting where the keys are.
Exactly.
And you blew it.
Yeah, I did. Let me see here.
You're
hold on.
$1 million down the tube. What's cool about these is you call them wallets, but there's really nothing in them except these digits, these numbers.
I guess I lost the pin. I was setting it up as a dummy account, but you get the idea. Yeah, there's nothing in it but the hardware keys, and they're all encrypted on that device as well.
Right. But you're right. So sometimes I see people put their Bitcoin wallet or their crypto wallet on their phone. That's probably a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, your phone can get stolen, and someone, if they can unlock it, they can get access to your...
That's why I used a really long, strong password known to no one, even me.
That's right. So you're safe.
I'm safe.
No one's ever stealing your coins.
My wallet. Because I keep my wallet on my NAS, and it syncs automatically to all my devices. That would be bad if I didn't have a password.
Right.
Although, as you've pointed out, there are brute force software that, since they have the wallet, they can hammer on it.
I would keep it on one of these hardware devices, get it off your computer. The one thing I will say that I like about this Ledger device, it's very similar to the Trezor. If you take a look at the screen and we scan out here, these are all the different wallets it supports, and there's a lot of different currencies here. So it'll support Ripples, it'll support what did you want to buy earlier? You wanted to buy Stellar, right?
Lumens.
Yeah, Stellar's on here as well.
Is it?
Let's see here. Yep, Stellar right there. It supports Stellar. So if you start buying a few of these different currencies, the more obscure ones, you have to make sure that you buy a hardware wallet that supports it.
My son is convinced that he can make money arbitraging
between exchanges.
Yeah,
that's being done a lot.
Is it possible to make? I guess you could write software. I feel like, though, one of the things that does happen is that every transaction alters the price almost instantly,
right? Especially if the volume's low.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because so even maybe not so much for Bitcoin, but any other coin.
Right.
There, it's going to be hard.
And the exchanges take a cut for every transaction as well, so you have to beat that.
So if he's doing that, that means he probably has a number of different currencies.
Right.
This is the kind of device that he would use then.
And one last honorable mention, it's one of the most popular. It's called MetaMask. And MetaMask is another software wallet, but it's only for the Ethereum network. But it supports Ethereum and all of the tokens underneath Ethereum. So you know how there's like hundreds of tokens, other currencies that are actually Ethereum-based.
Are those the ICO tokens?
A lot of them are ICO tokens.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
So if you...
So like Telegram, it wanted to raise money, so they sold... They closed so close to $1 billion worth of tokens.
Right.
I don't know... It's not like a stock. Is it like a stock? Is it, or is it? Does it have value? What are these tokens?
No, they have value. Eventually, some of them want to convert to their own currencies,
right.
And it's a way
but
to sell them now.
But for now, they're using Ethereum because that's established.
Exactly. So you know, you can go down the list here and take a look. And the best way to check, for example, 0x. Let's click on that. What is that? Is that a coin? Is it? And you'll see here, it'll say token somewhere on this, right here on this page. See that little flag that says token?
Yeah.
That's how you know this is an actual token and not its own standalone currency.
Got it.
So if you wanted to add 0x, you would go into MetaMask, and then you could go under here under Tokens tab here on the right and say add a token, and that's where you would put in 0x here.
Oh, that's
and then
important
you can receive 0x.
That. Yeah, that's important to be able to do that as
right.
well. Yeah. We should point out that all of this is highly speculative. I was
yeah.
Warren Buffett, who is probably the smartest investor in the world, does not buy cryptocurrencies. He said, because I don't buy gold either. Those are what we call speculative investments, mm-hmm. where the only value is what people will pay for them. And there's no rational way to figure that out ahead of time. Whereas if you buy a stock, if you buy Apple stock, you know, it's a well-run company with a good
sure.
brand name. And that Warren's very good at figuring out what those companies are. He says, I can't figure out what Bitcoin is or you know, any other cryptocurrency.
Yeah, most people I talk to in this world, they say, you know, it truly is invest what you can lose, or at least lose like three quarters of it.
Right.
So if you stick with that, you're going to be okay.
Send me your Bitcoin. It'll be safe in my wallet.
You need to create a new wallet. Because if they send you the Bitcoin from your old tweet, was it a tweet or where was it that you started?
It was on the
them?
Website for a long time. You know, remember you could donate and that we had PayPal and other, and I had a big QR code.
This
for
happened
Bitcoin.
To 50 Cent, by the way. Did you know this?
No.
The rapper?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 50 Cent accepted album sales for some of his album.
It's pronounced 50 cents. I just.
No, it's cent.
No, I'm just teasing you.
So I was like, did I get
it's actually,
it wrong?
It's actually 50 cent.
50 cent.
Yeah.
So with he accepted payments for his album in Bitcoin, forgot that he had it, but, you know, he remembered his password.
He did remember.
Yeah, so he had like
he probably had
$10 million, I think is what it was.
Oh, my God.
So
well,
you're
now
like,
he admits
like
he didn't have
cent,
any.
Basically.
He's bankrupt? 50 Cent is bankrupt?
No, he's back in now that he got his
he's
Bitcoin.
He's down to his last 50 cents. So he... No, it said in there, he admits he never had any Bitcoin.
No.
He was...
Did
the whole thing
out?
Was a scam.
No. 50 Cent's a bit... Oh, well, he's hiding it. Of course he never had any Bitcoin.
It's in the Cayman Islands like any sensible
yeah.
Bitcoin. Or maybe in...
It's not in the Cayman Islands.
This.
It's on one of these secure
on
ledgers.
These things in a safety deposit box. This is fascinating. And
it's
I'm glad
crazy,
to talk
wild.
To somebody who understands this because it really is kind of crazy.
It's scary. It's scary.
And it's interesting. And I do think that there are, and this is the other thing Warren Buffett said, a lot of scammers.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to take advantage of people.
Especially all these ICOs. You don't know where they're coming
yeah.
from, who's behind them.
Well, we know that a couple of it, there was a big ICO out of, I think, Thailand, where they disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
They took all the money and they're gone. It's called the exit scam.
That's happened a ton of times.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Be really careful. But nevertheless, if you do have some Bitcoin or legitimate cryptocurrency, it would probably be a good idea to store it
securely.
Lock it down. How much is the ledger? I think I might get
this. What was the ledger? The ledger was 75, I believe.
That's who's making money. You know who made money in the gold rush?
Shovels.
Levi's, yeah. Shovels and denim.
79 euros.
79 euros. Well, it's got to be.
Oh, one thing. Be careful when you buy these. I think they fixed the problem, but there was when people were selling them on eBay.
Oh.
And they would go and they would include these instructions saying you don't need to, here's the PIN, but they had the original passphrase.
Here's the PIN.
So they would
use
wait,
my PIN.
They would wait till people transferred their funds in and then restore it on another device and steal all the cryptocurrency. So buy it directly from the manufacturer. There's holograms now. There's seals now. Just make sure you're doing it the right way. The Model T. I didn't know they had a Model T. There's a new one.
Yeah. It's a little more expensive. It's 139
Look
euros.
Look at that.
Yeah. It's evolved.
That's the Rolls Royce.
Yeah, the Rolls Royce of cryptocurrency wallets. Thank you, Kevin Rose.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here, too.
Yeah,
really
it's good to be here.
It.
It's good to
yeah,
see you.
I know you'd love to be with the baby, but it's good to give them.
It's good to have some time off, too, from the baby.
Yeah, exactly. How would you like to, just for old time's sake, answer a question?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do a call.
Sounds
for
great.
What do you say? All right, here we go, Kevin. Let's take our call.
All right.
From Patrick in Greenbelt, Maryland. Hey, Patrick.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Hey, Patrick.
I'm well. How are you?
Good.
Patrick is a graduate. He's a PhD. Yep. Graduate studies in material science.
Love that.
What is material science?
really broad field has to do with materials, which make everything up.
The science
of materials.
Anything
you can imagine.
Yeah. I always thought that was interesting. Like, you wouldn't make a bridge out of cream cheese because it has a very good compaction ratio, but the torque ratio isn't so hot. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
No.
So, to give you a better idea, so I work on like fuel cells and batteries.
Oh, neat.
New materials that will work better for those applications.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Do you have a Tesla?
No, I don't. My advisor does, though.
Yeah, yeah. So. Do you have a Tesla?
I have one on order.
You're getting a Model 3?
Yes.
Yes. I have an X.
I have an X on order as well.
The X. It's perfect for a baby. You can open it up and you can just put the baby right in there.
That's what you did. Just slam him right in.
What can we do for you, Patrick?
So right now, I have my own domain name that I have like the MX records set to go to Google with a G Suite account, and I use Google to manage my email. I'm looking for alternatives other than using Google. I don't really use the Gmail interface. I use the Apple Mail app instead, doing IMAP on it, so it doesn't really matter to me what the service is.
So you're thinking of Google, basically.
Other than the...
Yeah. So the way email, in a nutshell, the way email works is somebody sends message to an address. That's the address you bought, and you own that, right? You didn't buy it. Did you buy it through Google Domains or...?
Nope, I own the full domain.
Perfect. So they send it to that address. That address in its DNS record has an MX record, that's an email record, that says, oh, no, I don't want it. Send it over there. And the mail basically bounces off the registrar and goes to, in your case, goes to Gmail. And you're using Gmail basically as an IMAP message store, which is, and it's not even a very, by the way, it's not even a very good IMAP message store. But it has one advantage. It's absolutely free, except if you pay for G Suite, then it's not. So what do you do? How do you do
I've luckily got an old enough account that it's free.
Oh, that's good. At least that's
I actually use Google Suite. I got to tell you, the reason I do this, though, is because I'm paranoid, and I know Google has a great security team.
There has never, to my knowledge, been a Google breach.
Yeah, for their email, I don't think so.
For anything, as far as I know. I mean, there's hard. Yahoo, 3 billion accounts or whatever.
Right.
I mean... Google, absolutely. And of course, you know a lot of the guys. And I think Google is very well designed. I don't use Google. I'll tell you why I used to. What I used to do, here's my old system. I own my own domain, leoville.com. I've had it since 95. In the DNS record, my MX record pointed to Gmail. So if you sent something to my email address, it would then go to Gmail. Mm-hmm. And the reason I did that is because Gmail had the best anti-spam stuff.
Right.
It's got collaborative anti-spam.
Right.
And I considered that my sewage treatment facility. And then I would have another service, Fastmail, fetch the mail from Gmail, and I used Fastmail as my primary message store. Hmm. So I really basically was passing it through
Why
Gmail.
Why Fastmail, though?
Fastmail is in my opinion, the best IMAP implementation out there. It's really, really good. Opera bought them for a while, but they sold it back to the original Fastmail founders. Here's a couple of features I like about it. It's not free. You're going to pay maybe $100 a year if you have a lot of content going through there, $9 a month for the professional. Mm-hmm. And I actually probably pay more than that because I'm used to Gmail, so I just keep all my email. I never delete email, so
right.
I need a lot of storage. It has... A couple of things I really like. Spam Assassin, which is a very powerful, very smart...
Open source, right?
Open source anti-spam filtering. I used to think I needed Gmail to get rid of the spam. When I turned off Gmail, I found out, no, Spam Assassin's doing fine. So Spam Assassin, it also has something called Civ. Now, this goes way back to the dim, dark days of email. Civ is a command line-based filtering program. And now, fortunately, Fastmail has a good GUI interface to it. So you can set up rules. Rules to me are, if without rules, you have nothing, right? Email is unusable. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I don't really use rules. You use it to filter and sort and move things.
Yes.
Around. Are you using Apple Mail?
No. Well, you can because it's an IMAP server. So
right. One
of the reasons you want IMAP, and I think you probably already know this, Patrick, is that you need somewhere to put your email. In the old days, you'd have a Popmail server, which meant they'd hold it for you, but then you download it and it would live on your machine. And as soon as people got more than one machine, they realized this is crazy.
Right.
We're saying leave it on the server, download it over here, and it was just a mess. It made sense in the old days when ISPs had to pay for that storage space. It was expensive. So they didn't want your email on their server. They wanted you to host, to have it on your own server. When Gmail came along, that changed everything.
Sure.
Because they said unlimited storage, keep everything, it's free. And that really put pressure on everybody to move to a better system, which is IMAP. Now, Gmail is not IMAP. It's IMAP-like.
Right.
And the biggest issue Gmail has with IMAP is this tagging, this filtering system. Right. It doesn't use real filters.
Right.
It doesn't move stuff into folders. It gives them a tag.
Right. That's what I use.
And the problem with these tags is a real IMAP client, like Apple Mail,
it ignores them, right?
Well, it's confused by them.
Yeah.
So, of course, Apple Mail has to work with Gmail, so they have workarounds.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to Thunderbird or Claws or any, like, powerful IMAP, it gets confused by this tagging system.
Yeah.
One of the advantages tagging has is email can live, it can have multiple tags, right? And so in your view on Gmail, it looks like it's in multiple folders.
That's different than IMAP folders, right?
IMAP actually has to
be in the folder.
It has to be in a folder.
Right.
You can have copies, but yeah, so it's a little different. I like IMAP. I think IMAP is it's an old, very solid standard. Every email client in the world supports it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a real IMAP host, like Fastmail, it doesn't have to be Fastmail, but like Fastmail, you're going to have better success using clients. I think it's just going to work better. So I use and then Civ gives me the chance to write fairly complex, and I think people who use a lot of email end up coming up with fairly complex systems. I know what you do. You have many, many addresses.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I just tag them and put them in a different,
Yeah. So I want one address that everything goes to. And as I said, this address has been good since 1995.
And then you use rules, keyword-based rules, or how do you do that?
All kinds of rules. So I'll give you an example. If I see unsubscribe in the body of the message, that goes into a folder called mailing lists, and I never look at it
that's
again.
That's smart, actually.
Yes, of course. If it's addressed... If I am in the to line,
mm-hmm.
not a CC, not to 100 different people, but if I'm the one address in the to line.
The only person in the to line.
That goes to a special folder called Leo, because I know that was mail directly addressed to me. And the order is important, too. I do the unsubscribe first.
I love that you're giving people a way to hack and like send you email.
It's fine. Nobody sends me email because I don't read it. And then there's lots of things you can do. A good filtration system is really important. A good anti-spam system is really important. Fastmail, I think, is a very robust, solid email server. They have a lot of other things. They actually, you can move your domain name to Fastmail, and they will do all the domain hosting. They do the more sophisticated. There's some very sophisticated email stuff, reverse DNS stuff, and stuff that makes sure that you can't be spoofed.
Yeah.
All of the things that I really am looking for, Fastmail does. So that's the one I use. But if you want security, you might use Proton Mail.
I love Proton. I was just going to say Proton. That is the absolute most secure email service.
And it uses
out there.
PGP encryption and behind the scenes.
It's really cool.
And that's
based
a real.
The servers are in Switzerland?
Yeah. Not just in Switzerland, in a mountain.
There's the mountain.
It's in the mountain. So you
is
know
it
it's
really safe. In the mountain?
Yeah, they say so.
Yeah, they've got an Android app, iOS app. It's pretty cool stuff.
So the nice thing about this is that built-in end-to-end encryption.
Yeah, can you do IMAP through this?
Yeah.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
So can you have a hosted domain here as well?
That I don't know, but that really doesn't require them to
point
cooperate.
The MX.
Right.
Right.
So you can use anything that will accept email.
Mm-hmm.
You just have your domain host. You change your DNS record or your domain host. I use Hover, and I just go in there and I say MX record, point to Proton.
You just need a domain that allows you to go in, or a host that allows you to go in and edit those MX records.
That's right.
Because not all of them allow you to go to that level of detail, right?
Not necessarily. There's another reason I like Fastmail is you could move your domain name to Fastmail, and they do provide all of that, plus some much more sophisticated email security features. Email is pretty old, not very good.
You don't use Pine anymore?
You can. With Fastmail, it works great.
No,
I'm a Mutt guy.
I was kidding.
I'm a Mutt guy. You got to use
amazing.
Mutt.
Amazing.
Mutt's the best.
This is command line, like old school.
Oh, I use Mutt in Emacs. And he's a graduate student, so I bet he does too.
What do you use? What's your mail client?
I just use Apple Mail mostly. I've played with other things, but nothing was worth the hassle to switch.
Actually, Apple Mail's pretty good. Plus, it supports PGP. Which is nice. It also supports SMIME certificates. I won't use an email client that doesn't let me not just encrypt, but sign my mail so that people can say, oh, that really came from Leo and it hasn't been modified. I think that's pretty important.
Have you seen these fancy ones with the AI built in, like Astro? You seen Astro?
Yeah. Well, now Google has this, right? There's one reason to stay with Google.
Yeah.
Is they're going to add this new autocomplete feature. I don't know if you saw Google I.O. Sundar Pichai wrote an email invitation to Taco Tuesdays, and he only, you know, had to hit a few keys and tab. And it just seemed to know that he wanted to do. He said, bring some.
Smart Compose.
Here, watch this.
As the name suggests, we use machine learning to start.
So wait a minute, stop. See that grayed out stuff? That's what the autocomplete is suggesting. So Sundar typed haven't S-E, and it says, oh, you mean seen you in a while? Hit tab. Go on.
As you type. All you need to do is to hit tab.
Wow.
And keep auto-completing.
Wow.
Now, how did it know tacos? How did it know?
Well, I mean, it's in the subject.
Bring the chips. No. Bring the chips and salsa. How did it know that? Anyway.
That's crazy.
So that's the kind of thing Fastmail does not do and will never do, I'm sure. So if that creeps you out, then Fastmail's a good choice. You may want to stay with
it. It takes all the human component out of it, though.
Well, notice his message was kind of dopey. Let's get together soon. Stuff you probably wouldn't really say, right?
Let's get together soon. Yeah, I guess you're right. You would say it for tacos.
But I don't know how it knew bring the chips and salsa. That's...
Wow.
And it even suggested a time.
Well, wait a second now. Is it looking at your calendar to know that you're free at 6?
Yeah, because notice it got his address, even though Sundar Pichai does definitely not live to 34th Smith Street.
Right.
But... I think that that's pretty impressive. I will have to wait. You know, these demos always look so good, and then you get it and you go, oh, this doesn't work. But that might be one good compelling reason to stay with Gmail. Although, you know what? G Suite won't get that. I bet you anything. You get screwed with G Suite.
Really? You get all this stuff, same stuff
you
as
get,
Gmail.
No, there's all sorts of stuff you can't do. Cause
like
you have
what?
I don't know. Jeff Jarvis is always bitching about it.
Oh, really?
Something, yeah.
It's something out there.
Something. Anyway, that would be a good reason to stay with Gmail.
Yeah.
This is the problem. There's no one perfect email service. The beauty of it is because you own your own domain, it's easy. You just change the MX record. You could use tomorrow, you could use Yahoo Mail if you were so inclined. Does that make sense, Patrick?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Do you know how to edit your DNS record?
Yep, I set it up, and I've got it with Hover, too, so I know I've screwed things up with them before and emailed them, and they helped.
They're really good if you screw things. They're really good at that. Actually, in most cases, what you'll do is, like with Fastmail, is they'll have a help page. Here's how you configure your domain name server to have mail forward. With Hover, unfortunately, and I wish they didn't do this, they do charge you, I think it's cheap, $5 a year, but they do charge you for that moving along. Hover, we should mention, is a sponsor of our fine show, and I love Hover. I feel like that should be free. Email bouncing, email redirection, that should just be free. But, you know, they got to make money somehow. $5, big deal. Okay,
well,
any questions about all that?
I'll check out Fastmail, and I had looked at Proton Mail, but I wasn't convinced on it. So
yeah, I mean, Steve Gibson says good things about it. I'm sure it's fine.
I think the thing with Proton Mail is I already have my own keys, PGP keys.
Good man.
And it was kind of like, I don't want to switch to a different thing when I already have mine all set up.
I think that's the best thing to do. The problem is for most people, it's so complicated and, you know, nobody knows what their key is. And it's...
Why not host your own mail server, though? It sounds like he's definitely could pull it off if you're doing PGP.
Reliability.
Yeah,
like, for the one day that it's not up and I don't get an email, I don't want to deal with that.
That's fair.
So
I tell you, I'm sure there are other, and I would love to hear from people if they have, you know, IMAP services they love. First of all, you got to use IMAP, but there are many, many IMAP services out there. I guess you could use Exchange Mail if you're really tied into the Microsoft ecosystem. Mm. Exchange has some features that IMAP doesn't have. But for uptime, reliability, service support, and everything, Fastmail, I've been with them for years, and I've really been happy with the job they do.
Well, great. Thank you for the recommendation.
My pleasure. Nice to talk to you, Patrick. So
thank you.
You just, like, what do? You just set up, if you want, like, you just set up a new email account?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I go into...
That's how you filter.
Yeah, is new email accounts, right. And I'll just do Google domains and add a new account. They have one click to add a new user.
Oh, that's
It's $5
nice.
A month, so it is a little pricey.
You be careful about it.
Yeah, so you just do...
Piling up the users.
Exactly.
You do know that you can... you know this, but I'll tell people who don't know this. With Gmail, first of all, ignore the dots.
Right.
You put all the dots
in. You can put them anywhere.
Doesn't matter. But what you can do is put a plus sign in. Mm-hmm. So if your email address, well, I'll use mine, which is laporte@gmail.com. If I'm saying I want to make sure that this company isn't sending me spam, I'm signing up for something. Mm-hmm. I can do laporte plus their company name at gmail.com. It'll still come to laporte@gmail.com, mm-hmm. but now I can see and I can even filter on it
and block that later.
Yeah, right. So that is a nice feature. Anything following the plus in your Gmail, use your real Gmail address followed by plus, and then anything after that, it will all go into your inbox, but you'll be able to filter against the stuff that's after the plus, which is, I think, very handy. You could just create, you know, laporte+spam@gmail.com. And God, I'm going to get a lot of spam at that address. Good thing I don't use it anymore. You know why? You know, actually, the real reason I stopped? Because it's a bad email address. Laporte@gmail.com. You never want to, like, if you used Kevin@gmail.com, you got in early, you got Kevin, it would be unusable.
Well, I have Kevin Rose@gmail.com, and it's unusable.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. But you really don't want it. There's a guy who has Jim@AOL.com.
Right.
He cannot use his email because it's too generic.
Yeah.
Right? And the problem with Laporte, it's a very common French name, and I get all this French spam.
Yeah.
And plus, I think there are people who put space in their email address, like Roland@Laporte.gmail.com. That throws out Roland.
Oh, crazy.
So I get in French, well, the event you'll want to go to is tonight in Paris. And it's like, I wish I could go, but I'm not Roland. So
good,
I finally
good accent.
Yeah, well,
I like that.
I am practically French with a name like Laporte. So that's why I don't use Gmail anymore. Anyway. Anything else you want to say about email? Tell me all your secrets.
My email secrets?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty vanilla, man. Just Gmail app on my phone.
Do you read your email?
I do, yeah.
Really?
Well, I mean, I have it hidden, though. I don't like to put it out publicly.
You don't use Kevin Rose@gmail.com.
That's right,
anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I go in there every once in a while and pick through things.
That's, by the way, when we send him email, let's not use that address anymore? Okay. Just
have you guys been using that?
That's all we use.
I have a bounce back saying I don't use it anymore. Okay.
We have your real address. Okay. Yeah, I think it's a good idea to have other addresses. It's easy on Gmail to create new addresses. If you're not on G Suite, it's free.
Yeah.
Create as many addresses as you want. I just, okay. I just thought you'd have something more sophisticated. I can't
easy.
Even. Oh, your mail's here. By the way, Fastmail does have. How did you do that? That was very good. Fastmail does have both iOS and Android apps that are pretty good. They're not as great as Apple Mail, but they're pretty good.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. We got to do something. Next week, Padre is going to be here. He is, as you know, he's going to Rome soon. So if this may, I don't know if it's his last appearance, but it's one of his last appearances on the new Screensavers. If you've got a question or you just want a blessing, here's how you can get on the show.
Need tech help? The new Screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
May 11th, 1998. What were you doing on that date? 20 years ago Friday, Tech TV, it was ZDTV back then, went on the air. And we went out and we asked everybody who worked there in those early days for a little video thought or memory. And this is all we got.
Oh, hey, Tom Merritt, host of Daily Tech News Show here. 20 years, really? I don't know that I even really think that often about Tech TV or ZDTV, but man, there were some good memories. The filter fresh coffee, the free oatmeal. But mostly what I remember is the feeling that we were all doing something different, something special. And even though we were very frustrated by things from day to day, it was not surprising that we all look back on it fondly even now. So anyway, you know, thanks for asking for my memories of this. I guess the one memory I'll share is working on the Screensavers in 1999, late at night. The rest of the team had gone on to Comdex, and Greg Drebin came over and said, "Hey man, appreciate your hard work." That was pretty great. And that was, I had only been there a couple of months. It was the kind of thing that really kept me going. So anyway, that's one of my memories, very personal to me. I don't know if it's necessarily exemplary of the time, but it was a great time. So happy birthday, ZDTV, Tech TV. All right, I was on my lunch break, so I'm just going to head off.
I was the producer of The Screensavers and Call for Help, and I remember exactly where I was when the network went live, standing upstairs in the control room with our director of operations, Dave Seidel, and with our executive producer, Greg Drebin. At least that's how I remember it. And I remember the technical director hitting the button to take the network live. We had this long promo that explained what the heck ZDTV was, a network all about computers. What? It really did seem ahead of its time. And it was. It was way ahead of its time, as evidenced by the fact that it doesn't exist anymore, or it died before it became a thing. And, you know, it was an incredible experience because really we were just all kids running this cable network. The inmates were running the asylum. There weren't that many grown-ups. I mean, for one thing, it was in San Francisco, so there weren't a lot of television professionals. Nobody had ever done this, made a cable station around computers and technology. And we just sort of made it up as we went along. I came from a TV background, although I'd always been interested in technology. And I was thinking of one story that would kind of encapsulate what it was like behind the scenes. And so many of you that are Screensavers fans remember Pat Norton, and he's still around and a great personality. He came from the IT world. He was so confident in everything he knew about computers. And I came from the TV world, but I really wanted to play in this computer and technology space. And I was always butting heads with Pat, and he would always say, well, Becky, I know, because I know about computers. And I would, wow, darn it. And it was sparring with Pat on so many issues that spurred me to go back to school and get a master's degree in computer science and education. It was just so inspiring to be around all this knowledge, and you just wanted more, and you wanted to be able to compete in the arena that was the Screensavers and Tech TV. You know, I think about all the people that were there and how we didn't just show up at work. It wasn't just like phoning it in. We lived Tech TV, ZDTV. There were so many people who would get together outside of work. We'd go have drinks. There were quite a few people dating. There are actually quite a few marriages that came out of Tech TV and ZDTV. Kids that are now 11 and 12 years old whose parents met behind the scenes at Tech TV. There's an incredible diaspora of all the people that were there that have gone on to different places in the industry. I mean, we have folks who work at me, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, the BBC. It's incredible when you think that we were just a bunch of ding-dongs trying to make pretend TV, and we actually did it. Tech TV and the Screensavers was just a huge part of my life. Meeting Leo and being inspired by him and having him be a mentor for me, he actually wrote the recommendation letter for me to go to grad school. And I just am so glad that I had that experience, that these people were in my life. And it just feels like yesterday. And it's insane to think that it was 20 years ago. ZDTV days. I miss them.
Thing strikes me most 20 years after, well, ZDTV, which became Tech TV, which then exploded into this diaspora of talent all over the internet and actual real television on cable and broadcast, is the people who were so incredibly generous and worked so incredibly hard and taught so many of us how to make television and gave us an opportunity to make television about things that we loved. And that really is the legacy for me of Tech TV, is not just the people we reached out through the camera, but the people we worked with behind the camera and how extraordinary they all were. Thanks.
Ah, Leo, Leo, Leo. How long has it been? 24? 36 hours since we did a show together? It's been a while, hasn't it? ZDTV, 20 years old. That would have made me, what, 16 when the network started? Yeah, let's go with 16. Definitely 16. Well, as our favorite poet Eminem once said, you only get one shot, one opportunity. And if you've taught me anything, Leo, it's that this is absolutely not true. You get two shots. So, thanks for the first and the second.
I'm spaghetti on the sweater. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Becky. Thank you, Tom Merritt. Thanks, Marty Sargent, for coming in earlier. And, of course, thanks to you, Kevin Rose.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah, those were the days.
Oh, so much fun.
Those were the days. We still have a few things lying around from... This is all Jerry stuff. Jerry, what did you do? You cleaned up at the eBay auction after the network went out of business.
When I got fired,
you kept all this stuff? Look at this. I never even saw this one. What is this? The Tech TV Man keychain? We made all. You know why we made all this stuff? Is for the cable affiliates, right? These are all. They were all gimmies. And the ZDTV beach towel, never used. This one you could sell on eBay. You make $3-4. Look at that.
About as much as the shipping.
Yeah, I know.
No, that's been used. Did you see that?
Oh my God, you used it.
Yeah,
it was in a box. Yeah, he keeps coming up with stuff.
I'm done.
Is that it? We've now emptied the prize closet. The ZDTV.coms, not sitcoms. That was clever. Amaze yourself. Let's get the mail back. Anyway, enough. Nostalgia. We don't need to live there. Although.
Yeah.
Although this is kind of funny. Look at this. So back in 2008, 10 years ago, you and I were in a race. This is kind of hard to believe. For the most followers on Twitter.
That's right.
Do you remember that?
I do remember this, yes.
And at the time, I was number one on Twitter with, get this, 30,000 followers. Number two, a guy, I don't know whatever happened to him, named Barack Obama. Then Kevin Rose, Jason Calacanis, Robert Scoble, Veronica Belmont, Merlin Mann, CNN Breaking News, which was not at the time owned by CNN, or maybe they bought it later. Michael Arrington, whatever happened to him?
He's still around.
Yeah.
He runs a crypto hedge fund now.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Mac Rumors, Alex Albrecht, your compadre from Dignation, John C. Dvorak, who really didn't want to be on Twitter, as I remember.
Hi, Jess Dean's on there.
Dave Troy, I don't know who that is. Oh, Twitter Vision. Jake Marsh.
Callie.
And Callie Lewis.
Crazy.
This is back when being a podcaster was hot stuff. Now, here's the difference.
Come back.
First of all, Kevin beat me shortly thereafter. First you beat Barack Obama. That was 12 days
you won.
Later. I won, well...
You got the T-shirt.
I got the T-shirt, and then you creamed me. But you know who really changed it all was Ashton Kutcher, your friend Kutcher. When he joined Twitter, that's when everybody else started joining Twitter. But you were smart. See, I got a T-shirt. You invested in Twitter.
I begged to get in.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew?
That was my entire life savings I put into Twitter.
Did you really?
Pretty much.
And are you happy?
It worked out.
Did you get out?
I got out. Yeah. It worked out.
It's not. It's important to know when to buy, but it's also important to know when to sell, isn't it?
Yeah, without a doubt.
You could ride it all the way down.
You always want to be diversified. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'm learning from this guy. This guy knows. Email number one. From Truman, my daughter recently moved into an apartment. I want to get her a wireless security camera she can look at on iPhone and we'll let her know if someone is in her apartment. She lives upstairs, so probably just needs one. What would you recommend? Do you have an opinion?
You know, I actually bought a couple of these recently because of the whole new baby thing.
Yeah.
And,
do you use it as a baby monitor or just for security?
You know, just I have a different one that's a baby monitor.
Yeah.
So but I did get a Nest and also a Ring.
Yeah.
And they're both pretty awesome.
I agree.
I really don't know that you kind of have to like love the software, and they're both decent.
Yep.
And I have the Ring. I use the Ring the most, I would say.
The one thing to keep in mind on all of these is not only is the initial cost, but you're going to be paying a monthly fee for a subscription so that they store the video.
If you want history. That's
and you
right.
kind of do. You at least want a few days of history,
right? Right.
I think that's something to always keep in mind is there's going to be an additional cost to
The one thing that bothers me that I'd love to figure out is how much bandwidth each of those consume. A lot, right?
A lot.
So how do you fix that problem? That's actually stopped me from doing like multiple cameras at a house because I just don't want all my bandwidth going to these cameras.
Yeah. We should mention Ring is a sponsor. And then there's one other sponsor that you didn't mention. I don't know. Have you seen the Lighthouse? Because this is a very cool camera.
No.
So this is a camera. Oh, here it is. So the idea is it's much like a Nest or any other camera, but it's got the camera, but it also has infrared LiDAR sensor. It's got a time-of-flight LiDAR sensor. So it builds a 3D map, and it uses AI. The guy who started this was in the DARPA Grand Challenge. He's an MIT AI guy. And it uses AI to distinguish humans, pets, from, you know, Mylar balloons and other things moving in the house. But it can tell the difference between a pet and a human. It can tell the difference between different humans. So you could say, for instance, ping me when Daria gets home.
Right.
Or did Daria come home with Toaster after 2 p.m.? Or, and if it's the dog sitter, you'll know the difference.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool, too. I would say, this is a little more expensive than a Nest, I think.
That's pretty cool.
I can't remember. But we found it when it was a Kickstarter project, and now they're going great guns, and they're a great sponsor. But I also use it, and I like it. One of the other things it does, $299, that's actually not that bad. It's not more than the Nest. And one of the other things it does that was a must, Lisa does not like cameras in the house. She says, I don't know where that video's going.
Right.
Right? I mean, in fact, I showed her a video. Yeah, here you are, you know, in the middle of the night walking into the kitchen naked.
Right.
She doesn't know where that video is going to go. So the nice
thing about it. That's fair.
That's reasonable, right?
Yeah. Especially with a Kickstarter project. Yeah.
That's what's neat about Lighthouse. So it's on your phone. You can say, when I'm home, turn off. I don't need a camera when I'm home.
Oh, interesting.
So, and you can say
that's awesome because it can recognize it's you.
Yeah. Well, it recognizes from the phone. So
from the phone.
It knows
okay.
that the phone has joined the network. Actually, it would recognize you as well. But, I think that's another thing to consider. Your daughter gets this camera. It's on when she's home unless she remembers to turn it off or cover it up or turn it away. The nice thing about a camera with some smarts like the Lighthouse is you can set it up, but the camera's off.
Yeah.
It's off right now because Lisa's home.
Well, the other thing, too, is I have one of them just sitting in a box because you have to mount them.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is nice.
It's just like ready. That's like ready to go. Yeah. That's
and
pretty awesome.
And it swivels. I think it comes off. Maybe not.
The number of times I've seen you think, I think this does it, and then it breaks
right
on
off.
Air. Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have a bad. It has a microphone. Oh, it's two-way. The other thing is when Zelda gets a little bit older, she's not going to have a smartphone yet, but you can teach her, just wave at the camera, it'll ping Daddy, and then it sends a message to your phone saying, Zelda's waving at you. You could say, hi, Zelda, because it's got a speaker.
Oh, that is
amazing.
You
can hear her back.
That is so cool.
You should get one of these.
I'm definitely going to get one.
I can arrange it.
Do you have a coupon code?
Yeah, I might. I might have more than a coupon code, my friend. I think probably if you use Twit, that almost always works. Do you have a question? No.
We were going to talk about another device.
Oh, I want to see this.
Yeah, check that
out. Now, we had a sponsor called Motive that made a ring that would sense your sleep, which is good because I don't like to wear a watch in bed, but it would also do your exercise and all that. It's pretty cool. You charge it. It would go a couple of days. But this is a new product. It's not out yet, right?
Yeah, so this is the second generation of a product called Aura. And I will say they did sponsor a previous podcast that I was on, but I have no ties to them today.
I remember when you were singing the praises of a company that hadn't yet launched a product called Fitbit, and I ordered one the minute it came out, so I trust you. So what's good about this
Aura? So check this out. I can show this off right here. So this is my actual data. So Aura has, because of the proximity to your arteries and your finger, and they sample at...
It says go easy. Why is it telling you to go
because
easy?
Because I had bad night's sleep last night. So here's my sleep from last night. And you can see...
You consider 91 a bad night's sleep?
Well, you can see my... Well, also, it looks at a couple other factors, okay. Slow, too.
Because I would be happy to have a 61 these days.
Well, check this out. My deep sleep was pretty bad. You can see my different sleep...
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, 53 minutes is not enough. No.
Sleep stages here. Here's my resting heart rate.
And this, wow.
And it does actually your how many breaths per minute and everything. It's crazy the amount of data that they have.
Just the glare a little bit. We can't see the whole thing.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, got the glare on there.
You forgot about that.
So. Yeah, I forgot the secrets.
Go easy. So, and your heart rate, what is it? Readiness, what is that?
So it says my readiness score, your resting heart rate was above average, and you may not be entirely recovered.
Right.
So it can be late workouts, stress, stimulants, alcohol. I had pizza last
night. When's
this
going to be out?
This ships in probably 3 weeks now.
How much?
I believe they're $250 or $299.
Yeah, that's about what the Motive was as well. Aura is spelled with an O.
Yeah,
O-U-R-A.
And then they also check this out. This is the activity tracking piece of it as well. So it's just like a Fitbit in that way. It shows you the number of calories you've burned, how many steps you've taken.
I like this. I wear an Apple Watch, but you don't want to wear it all the time. I like the idea. So you wear this. How long does it charge last?
5-day battery life.
5 days.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome.
You wear this all the time?
All the time. It's great. It really is.
Initially, these things, including the Fitbit, were really just glorified pedometers. But we are getting to the point now, thanks to heart rate, I think, primarily, but also sleep tracking, where they know a lot more about you.
Check out these different things that you can actually cut into the data with. You can say, show me my bed start time. And this is over time when I go to bed.
You're very consistent.
Which is good. You want to be consistent on that
stuff. No, I'm terrible. Yeah.
REM sleep.
Yeah.
Amount of REM sleep over time.
Can you correlate that to coffee?
That's what they're working on. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Because I'd like to know if that affects my REM sleep. That'd be valuable. Or exercise. Or saunas.
It's pretty cool.
Nice. That's O-U-R-A. And which model is this?
This is the second generation. So they only have one out now that they're shipping with. The last one was pretty big, and they were able to get the size of it down quite a bit. So it looks just like a normal ring.
So I have to decide if I'm going to get a Rylo, a GoPro, Fusion, or an Aura.
I can get you a coupon code for this one.
Are you an investor?
No.
No? I just like it.
I just like it a lot. Nice. I know the CEO quite well. He's a buddy. And it's just a great product.
What's interesting about all of this stuff is that they're getting these sensors so small that it can easily be in a ring. I think it's going to be interesting to see if we start getting earbuds and other things that can measure more than just heart rate. Blood pressure, VO2 max, that kind of stuff would be very interesting.
Yeah. It's really cool.
The quantified self. Kevin Rose, you've got a newsletter. We know that. So where can I subscribe to that?
Yeah, so I have a podcast called The Kevin Rose Show. It's not. It's a couple times a month.
Okay.
And it's very like quantified self, biohacking, productivity hacking, things like that.
Good.
My newsletter, you can subscribe to that, which is once a month on there. And I'd say the other big thing I'm working on is a new version of Oak, my meditation app.
Good. I really like Oak.
Oh, thank you. There's going to be a big, big new redesign and a bunch more courses, and it's going to be free still. So, yeah, everything is linked on KevinRose.com.
KevinRose.com. Kevin, it's really always a pleasure to see you. Please give my love to Daria and Zelda.
Yeah, we'll do.
Come back anytime. Toaster.
Yeah, I'll bring toast next time.
Yeah, usually you bring toast. Where's the dog?
Yeah, I know. I should have. He loves for a little trip out.
How does Toaster like the baby? Is it all right?
Yeah, he's getting used to it.
Yeah, he's had you all to himself.
Yeah, he was a little bit like, you know.
What is this little thing?
Yeah, now he'll come up and little licks and things like that. So it's awesome.
It's great to see you.
Yeah, good to see you as well.
Thank you for coming to the show, watching it. Aren't you glad you watched today? I think you might be. We do this show every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. If you want to watch, you can actually get tickets. They're free. Just email tickets@twit.tv. We love having a studio audience. Do be aware that coming up to Petaluma on a weekend, traffic's usually pretty bad. So leave some extra time if you want to come to the show. If you want to watch live on the stream, you can do that too, twit.tv/live. But if you do that, you should really probably be in that chat room at irc.twit.tv. Those are the smart kids in the back of the class making fun of the teacher. You can also watch on demand. Everything we do is available at our website, twit.tv. In the case of this show, twit.tv/NSS. But my favorite way for you to watch is to subscribe. Get your favorite podcast app, whether it's Overcast or Pocket Cast, Google Play or iTunes, whatever it is you use, your podcast app on your phone, just make sure you subscribe to the new screensavers. And get the video. There's audio too, but, you know, there's a lot of pictures in this show. That way you'll have an episode every single week the minute it's available. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on the new screensavers. Bye-bye.
Yay. 3 years. Solitude.